Okay, I hit the record button.
Okay, it's 1:30. Let's convene the meeting for the Clallam County PUD Commissioners. June the 8th. First item is approval of the consent agenda. I think we all have had copies of that. Do I have a motion?
Okay, if nobody else has any questions, I move we approve the consent agenda, all five line items there.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda for June 8, 2020. All those in favor?
Aye.
Next item is agenda revisions. Do we have any, Doug, or?
No agenda revisions from us.
Anything from the board?
I have nothing.
Nothing, but I mean, I can just some stuff that ought to be there, and I can cover it in my commissioner comments. And
good. All right, the next item is comments from the public. I think Sean has outlined the ground rules for that. He's taken your name, and we'll call on you one by one. So you've got it, Sean.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody here. Just a second. I'll figure that out. You all. Okay, if anybody wants to make a comment, state your first name and I will go in order.
Nina Sarmiento.
Anybody else want to make a comment? Name, please.
Morris.
Okay, well, the first commenter is Nina.
Okay, Nina.
Okay, thank you. I'm a resident of Port Angeles. My name is Nina Sarmiento, and I saw that on the agenda today you will all be discussing the expulsion of Clallam County PUD from the Public Power Council, or PPC. And I wanted to say that I participated in the protest that got Clallam kicked out of the Public Power Council. And based on the reaction, and I also was looking at the agenda packet, based on the reaction of PPC members saying they were surprised and alarmed by the protest, that it was an overwhelming success. We succeeded in getting important messages to CEOs and elected commissioners who would not have listened otherwise.
Has joined the meeting.
The decision to kill sea lions and birds protected under the Migratory Bird Act simply because they eat salmon is wrong. Yet the Public Power Council sees it as a logical solution. See this as scapegoating. What they want to see, and they truly believe they are helping salmon. We shattered this belief that day. The people in that organization have immense power, and the public, through protest, can show that they do not agree with the decisions being made behind closed doors.
Let me interrupt you just for a minute. I'm going to hold you to 3 minutes, so
okay.
I want to conclude. Did we lose her, or what happened?
No, she's still there.
Oh, I've been 3 minutes, so you can move on. I'm muting myself.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, next is Patty.
Okay, Patty.
I was hoping that at least wanted to find out if you were asking who is on the phone and who's attending the meetings. I know it's easy when they're coming to an in-person meeting, but I didn't know whether you are recording who's actually attending your meeting via phone, because you can't see the names on those. And I think it would be good if you did, if you're not.
Sean, can you answer that?
I don't have any way to record the names of the call-in users, but we can capture the people that use the WebEx link.
Is there a chance that you could ask people who are on the phone to identify themselves so that it could be recorded as who's attending?
We could do a roll call.
Thank you.
Okay, well, why don't we do that so we can see who actually participated in the meeting?
Okay, would the call-in users please identify themselves?
Werner Bueller.
Are you able to hear that, Sean? I'm not.
It's very faint. Looks like that was all of them, Will.
Okay, good. All right, other comments?
Looks like Brian is raising his hand, Will.
Okay.
So, with regards to Milam County PUD's relationship with consulting agencies such as the Public Power Council, it seems as though some of the information that you rely on may not be entirely based on facts. In other words, there is a divergent view, and I wonder how often, or if at all, that comes into the reasoning process, the deliberation process, when you make decisions regarding, for instance, contractual obligations with the EPA. And what I would urge and what I would hope that our PUD is doing is that you look at all of the information that is coming in, whether it doesn't complement what you may want to hear or agree with philosophically, yet is significantly critical to making decisions regarding contractual obligations and your strategic plan. And so I would just simply urge you to examine those relationships that you have with your consulting agencies. And if there is information to the contrary, that you not brush it aside, but in fact give it a due deliberative process. That's what I want to say.
Okay, thank you. Are there other comments? Okay, I guess we can move on then. Under business items, our first item is acceptance memo for completion of water main construction. Tom Martin, I'm not sure who's presenting that.
I'm here, Will. And say good afternoon to all the commissioners. The work that we're asking you to accept is part of the north, the Bagley Creek project that Washington State Department of Transportation is working on as part of their culvert improvements for Fish Passage. And so the WSDOT has asked us to relocate our water mains outside of their work area that's coming up. And so this contract was with a construction company called Two Grade, and they were doing some of the preparation work for installing a major bypass of our existing pipeline through that work area, so the new bypass outside of the work area. And so they entered in the contract back in February, and they finished up in, I believe, in April. And the original contract amount was for $79,500. There was 4 change orders, unforeseen conditions, ended up being $99,423. So they put in 2 new valves in line in our existing water main, and they also did a main extension to serve 2 houses along the side road, James Page Road, so they could be still in water during the washout construction activities.
So those change orders were outside the original scope, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there were unforeseen conditions, like, for instance, James Page Road, which is a side road next to Highway 101. Underlying the road, there was a slab of concrete where Highway 101 used to run, and we weren't sure that it was there, so they had to break through that. They get special equipment in from Kent to do that. We didn't really know how deep our main was in some locations, and they had to go deeper and put in extra pipe to and elbows to get it up to the level, to normal depths. And so that was the nature of the change orders.
So it didn't sound like you could have had unit pricing on those, on that work, huh?
No, we typically go lump sum on this, on these kinds of projects. We really didn't expect to see those kinds of questions.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I guess I have the same view that maybe Will's getting at. In some subsurface work like this, I think maybe unit price might be a safer way to go, because your change orders are up in the 15% range of the contract amount, and if they were all for unforeseen site conditions, that sort of lends itself. You're getting up in the range where it lends itself to unit price contracting.
Okay, well, we will take that into consideration for the next project.
Thank you.
Also, Tom, I assume this is in the WashDOT right-of-way, so we will not get any reimbursement. This is fully on our nickel here?
Yes, it is. It's on our nickel. In their right-of-way, this is not a private easement.
Okay, do we have a motion?
Yeah, I motion that we accept the memo of completion for bid number 201006 with 2 Grade LLC for the water main construction near James Page Road, Bagley Creek Road. Project was completed April 3rd, 2020 for a total contract cost of $99,423.33.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded to accept memo of completion for bid number 201006, 2 Grade LLC, for water main construction near James Page Road and Bagley Creek Road. The project was completed April the 3rd, 2020, for a total contract cost of $99,423.33. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Okay, thank you, Tom. This item is a bid award acceptance memo for pole inspection, treating, and reporting. John?
Yes, good afternoon, Commissioners. We have received bids for the annual pole inspection, treating, and reporting contract as outlined in the memo and bid tab included in the board packet. The bid amount is consistent with what we believe will result in 2,300 pole inspections and keep us on our 10-year test and treat cycle. There are 9 items, units that go into the bid, and we try to take care of about 1/10 of the poles every year. spreading this out over the course of 10 years. This inspection will pick up where we left off. We finished up the west end, and we're going to be starting in the Blinn area and eastern Squim area this time around. Pacific pole inspection did get the bid last time and had very satisfactory results. We had 3 bidders. So if there's no questions, staff requests a motion, second, and a vote to award bid number 201004 for pole inspection, treating, and reporting to Pacific Pole Inspection LLC out of Kelso, Washington as the low responsible bidder. The contract has a not-to-exceed amount of $125,600, excluding Washington State sales tax, and is to be completed by November 20th of this year, 2020.
And John, we don't have that bid number. Can you repeat that?
I'm sorry. The bid number is 201004, and the amount is $125,600.
I guess, John, I have a curious question. Two of the bidders have different prices for these different items, and you know, specifically the item A, B, and C. I'm curious, you know, the bidder that won has the same price for those, a lot of them, especially those three, and the other ones don't. Do you know why they bid that way?
I cannot say specifically why they did. Basically, for each of the inspections, they include basically certain reporting requirements and some photography and documentation and getting information back to us. It has to do with the treatment of a satisfactory pole and a reject pole. And I believe the item C, I'm not absolutely certain, but I believe it has to do with tagging as well. So there are differences, and I'm not sure why the low bidder bid the same amount of money for each one of those items.
Okay.
Our actual costs are generally based on an expectation of the number of reject poles as a percentage, but that's an assumption based on prior pole tests and treat. The number of rejects have ranged between 1.5% to as many as 6%, depending on what area of the county we're in.
So we used these people last time. If we use them repeatedly, I seem to remember we used to go with Osmos quite often, but they're the high bidders.
Yes, Osmos was quite a while ago. The last 2 years was Pacific Pole Inspection. I believe the 3 and 4 years ago, it was MyTech. And before that, my recollection runs out, but I believe Osmo may have done it 6 or 7 years ago.
So since they have used different pricing, do we need clarification on that, or do you think we're getting an apples-to-apples comparison?
Well, they're bidding. I'd have to refer to the contract. I do not have the contract in front of me. If you'd like to, we can postpone it. I can pull up the contract and give the specifics for the A, B, and C item so that we might be able to explain the differences, if you'd like that.
I don't think it's that important. What do the other commissioners think?
How about if I just provide information after the meeting for the specifics of items A, B, and C for the good poll and the 2 reject polls?
Yeah, that works for me.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that's fine.
So we'll just table this for the moment, huh?
Yeah.
I thought that we were going to proceed with it, and then John would send them information afterwards. But whatever commissioners want to do is fine.
That's fine. I'm ready to move on it. But Jim and Dave, what do you think?
I'm okay. I just kind of was trying to learn here about what their thinking was in the process, but we're fine with bid price.
Yeah, I'm okay with going ahead and approving it, and then John can just provide the backup there.
Okay, good. So we have a motion?
Yeah, I'll move.
Motion that we accept the authorize the bid award acceptance memo for pole inspection, treating, and reporting from Pacific Pole Inspection, LLC from Kelso, Washington. The contract will have an estimated not to exceed amount of $125,600, not including Washington State sales tax.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to authorize bid award acceptance memo for pole inspection, treating, and reporting from Pacific Pole Inspection, LLC, from Kelso, Washington. The contract will have an estimated not-to-exceed amount of $125,600, not including Washington State sales tax. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, our next item is Resolution 2171-20, adopting Clallam County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan for 2020. Larry, is Larry on? Who's presenting this?
This should be Larry if he unmutes. There he is.
Okay.
Larry, we can't hear you, Larry. Somehow you're getting muted. Sean, can you help him unmute there at all? No, now you're muted.
There, Larry, you should be good now.
Still can't hear you, Larry. There you go. That should be unmuted now. Okay, why don't we skip Larry and maybe someone from IT can help him out.
Okay, we'll come back to that item.
Okay.
Our next item is Resolution 2172-20, establishing network access charges for excess capacity. Is Sean on?
Yes, Commissioners, this is Sean Delpoint. Thank you. This is a change to our broadband pricing. We haven't made any changes since 2016, and we've reduced our internet pricing just a little bit for the large consumers based on what we get billed for from Villanet, and also made two provisions within our point-to-point services for 10-gig services, as well as level three services such as QMQ, BGP, MPLS, things like that for transporting traffic.
My question, I've asked this before, but do we know if these price reductions are going to the end user from our ISPs?
I can say on the point-to-point services they are, because typically the end user for point-to-point services contacts us directly, and then we put it through an ISP. For internet pricing, I couldn't tell you if they are or not. I can say that the ISPs currently at the moment have not been upping their charges to consumers, but that's all I know.
Well, since we're providing service at cost, then you would hope the ISPs are passing that on to their end users.
I got a question, Sean. How is this rate information? I just saw it starting Friday. has the public or the tribes or folks like out in Forks and so forth that are always asking about these kind of connectivity, have they seen these rates and the rate increases or the rates that we're suggesting, not increases? Because some of the rates seem kind of high, and I'm really not educated on what's a reasonable rate for these services, but, you know, 1 gigabyte charge for whatever it was, $75 a month or something. That's not a lot of data, but I'm just curious, are people reviewing this, and are we giving them a chance to look at this stuff, and kind of like what Will was getting at, is it really helping us, helping our rural customers, you know, get connected at a reasonable price?
The price changes you see here and the pricing that is in here doesn't impact any customers that would be a home user that you see here, other than the fact that we reduced our internet pricing. And if an ISP is providing internet to a house, then maybe it would be left to the ISP to determine if they want to price charge them more or less. I can't tell them what to charge people. What you see for our prices is what we charge our ISPs, not the end user itself.
And they're comparable with other, how many people are taking us up on these prices?
I have 9 ISPs.
Okay.
And our prices are less than CenturyLink and Wave for across the board. As an example, Wave Broadband, if they were to do a point-to-point service between two buildings of the same company, say from Port Angeles and one in Sequim, as an example, the county, we would only charge $800 a month for the two endpoints and all the transport at a gig rate, whereas a Wave or a CenturyLink charge anywhere between $1,900 and $2,400 a month for the exact same service.
Okay.
So basically, to see what the impact is to the end user, you'd have to get into the ISP's business plan and see what their costs are, and so it might really get bogged down into that, I suppose.
My understanding is my job is to make the ISPs viable and able to continue to provide services elsewhere.
Yeah, I realize you don't have authority, or it's not part of your job description to determine the fairness of ISP pricing, but it would be interesting to know. Okay, do we have a motion on this one?
Yeah, I move that we consider adopting Resolution 2172-20, establishing network access charges for excess capacity, and rescinding Resolution 2064-16, the resolution updates the fee schedule for network access.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 2172-20, establishing network access charges for excess capacity, and rescinding Resolution 2064-16. The resolution updates the fee schedule for network access. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, is Larry on now? Can we go back to that previous item? John, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm here.
I was wondering if anybody...
Yes, sir. I'll go check on Larry. Give me just a moment.
If you would. Thank you.
I've got an IT guy in there with Larry right now.
Ah, okay, so we got him covered. Okay.
No, probably not.
There he is.
There. Can you hear me okay now?
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Oh, yeah. Good to have a man like this around.
That's right. Yeah. We need him.
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and get started here on this multi-jurisdictional plan. What it is we've spent about a year with other agencies going over a plan. We have to adopt this plan so that in the future, even though we don't have any hazard mitigation plans right now, but we are involved from time to time on disasters that happen to us. And this gives us the opportunity, if we adopt this plan, along to be eligible for some grant money. And that would be basically it. And then it has to be redone every 5 years. So I'm hoping that we can get this plan adopted, and then we can move on and work for the next 5 years with this.
Larry, you'll forgive me if I didn't read the 400-page document that refers to all this stuff between last Friday and now. But let me just ask you, or maybe Doug can answer this question. You know, if we're looking at, with this, the potential grants that come through this program, you know, for instance, Doug, you and I have talked about how many transformers we've got sitting there. If we had an earthquake, you know, what would fall down? What's our backup? And I know we were trying to clean up a lot of that, but because part of the problem, we don't have a sufficient storage facility for a whole bunch of transfers, transformers that meets the EPA requirements. Is that the kind of thing that we might ask a proposal and get funding for?
You want me to answer that, Doug, or you're going to?
You go ahead, Larry. I'm not sure.
That's what this is. The grants are for, is to give us financial support in ordering and getting these transformers in at the time that we're needed. Is that what you're asking?
Well, in order to have sort of a reserve of transformers, you know, that are already here, because if we have an earthquake, it'll be 15 months before we see another transformer. And so, you know, so how do we build up a little bit of a cushion here?
Yeah, I don't know that I can answer that truthfully, as far as being able to get money ahead of time to buy transformers, to have them stocked. I think this all comes after the fact. Then we put in for the grant that we have supporting documentation that we need these items. That's the way I feel that it would work, just like it does now with FEMA.
Yeah, I look at this as being our first step, and then when we get into it further, we can report to you what's included and what we feel we can do and get from the grants.
Yeah.
What rises, who determines what rises to the level of hazard? You know, FEMA has been very slow to react to some of these things in the past.
There's certain conditions that have to be met. You have to have so much damage within the state. It has to meet a certain amount of money that is costing us before that emergency management says this is a disaster, and then they go into the state and then they declare it as well.
So this is jointly with the county, emergency management.
County, Sklallam County, Sklallam PUD, I mean Sklallam Tribe, Forks Tribe, City of Port Angeles, City of Squim, Fire District, and the port, and several others that I didn't name here.
Well, I guess nothing for, I mean, it's nothing that's holding us back, but sometime in the future, next month or two or whatever, Larry, I guess I'd like a little bit more information, and maybe, I don't know that it has to be in a commissioner meeting, but I'd like to understand really what kind of benefit we can get out of this in terms of, is it just planning stuff, or can we set up, you know, pre-positioned contracts for transformers, for instance? And how, because, I mean, if we have a big earthquake, I mean, all bets are off, and being able to say that we're going to be able to come back in 2 years later and get some money, well, that might help us financially for the long run, but we're going to be a mess for a long time if we don't, you know, from waiting, you know, if we don't have any pre-positioned stocks of this or that or whatever. But I just need to understand if that's, you know, what the scope of this thing is, these grants. Is it more of the upfront planning or what? So anyway, can we talk more about that, you know, maybe at a future meeting?
I'll look into it, get some more information, and bring it back.
You know, put together a report for one of the next commissioner meetings coming up.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
Okay, we're ready for a motion then.
Yeah, I would say it sounds like at this point this is a pretty much a reactive program we've got here, and adding a proactive component, as Jim pointed out, is something we should definitely look into. So I would say I'll go ahead and make a motion with the understanding that we could discuss that proactive component in the future. I do make a motion we consider adopting Resolution 2171-20, adopting Clallam County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan 2020, a plan document which was approved by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's FEMA Region 10, provides participating jurisdictions eligibility to apply for hazard mitigation grants.
I'll second the motion.
Let me just interject one thing. I noticed that we have here consider approving. We're actually approving, so we don't need to talk about considering. So anyway.
I agree with what Will just said.
Okay. So with that change, which I assume, Dave, you agree with that, eliminate consider.
Yeah.
All right, it's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 2171, adopting Clallam County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan 2020, the plan document, which was approved by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's FEMA Region 10, provides participating jurisdictions with eligibility to apply for hazard mitigation grants. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Larry. Okay, our next item is Clallam PUD membership expelled from the Public Power Council. Doug?
Yeah, let me start out to just mention that since the governor's proclamation regarding having meetings that could only be routine and necessary, we have not brought this subject forward, mainly because it didn't fit into that category. Recently, the governor has changed that, and we're basically back to normal meetings, or meetings normal as usual, with the exception that we can't meet together. So this issue, I can go ahead and read the letter that PPC sent to Clallam PUD, and I'll go ahead and start that. It was received on April 13, 2020, which was we started into the COVID where we had our emergency plan about March 23rd, and so this was after we were getting into it.
Doug, could I interject one thing? I think according to the AG's opinion, the routine and necessary was defined as anything that assured continuous operation of an agency and providing the service for which they were formed. So,
right. Okay. I'll go ahead and read this April 13, 2020 letter from Public Power Council. It says, Dear Doug, we are saddened to inform you that after much consideration, the Executive Committee of the Public Power Council, PPC, made the difficult decision to expel Clallam PUD from PPC effective April 1st, 2020. We have issued a refund of Clallam PUD's dues for the remainder of the year, and you should receive it shortly. Enclosed for your reference is a copy of the refund check. The Executive Committee did not come to this decision lightly. PPC values the long and trusted partnership it has built with Clallam PUD and recognizes Clallam's contribution to this organization. PPC is grateful for the many years of service and leadership that you, Commissioner Will Purser, and Clallam PUD's former power supply and utility service manager, Fred Mitchell, provided on the PPC's executive committee. The staff of the Clallam PUD are astute and professional, and PPC has always appreciated their contributions to its work. On behalf of the executive committee and the entire PPC, please accept our heartfelt thanks. Unfortunately, over the last several months, we have had serious concerns that one of your representatives may not share or respect PPC's expectations of confidentiality and non-disclosure. These concerns cannot be reconciled with the fundamental nature and purpose of this organization and are not conducive to Clallam's continued membership. You may have heard that protests appeared outside of PPC's March board meetings. making personal attacks on PPC staff, and unnerving the guests coming to present to PPC members. It was alarming, especially because the protesters had knowledge of the arrangements and information that PPC staff prepared exclusively for the PPC board as part of the PPC's quintessentially deliberative process. Disclosure of such information is injurious to the deliberative and consultative functions of PPC, inhibits the flow of analytical observations, opinions, and recommendations, and diminishes PPC members' ability to develop policy and make well-informed decisions. Fundamentally, it devalues the organization. There is evidence to support a concern that a representative from Calm PUD has been the source of disclosures that led to the protest. We have been concerned for some time that this individual may have been improperly disclosing PPC's information, but have taken a measured approach. The evidence we acquired following PPC's March board meetings, together with a discussion with this individual, unfortunately did not lessen our concerns. These actions have further produced a chilling effect that undercuts the safe deliberative forum that PPC was designed to create for members to consult expert staff, honestly deliberate and develop policy and negotiating positions. These breaches of confidentiality and trust, together with a concern about future disclosures, cannot be reconciled with PPC's organizational construct and purpose. To be clear, the issue is not that of any individual, that any individual disagrees with PPC's substantive work. PPC staff welcome scrutiny and will always examine competing theories in an effort to develop and improve their own recommendations. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with members having views that are different from those of other members. PPC values diversity of thought and excels at finding public power's common path forward. Indeed, from PPC's perspective, members and their representatives are free to participate in organizations contrary to the positions of PPC, as long as they do not jeopardize the confidentiality expectations of PPC as a result. The issue arises out of serious concerns that one of your representatives had demonstrated an unwillingness to treat PPC's forums and materials in a confidential manner. Calm PUD's membership gives its representatives special access to synthesized technical and research information, expert opinions, and strategic direction given to PPC expert staff. It also gives Calm's representatives special access to many regional policymakers and key executives. When this access to PPC's confidential forums and materials is misused, it weakens the effectiveness of the organization and diminishes the value to members. Many PPC members were alarmed by what transpired at the March meetings. Many have also shared their expectations that PPC will address the situation and ensure that PPC remains a forum for public power to analyze, deliberate, and resolve power supply issues among themselves and with regional partners without fear of external disclosure. This is especially important now because public power utilities are entering a critical time as they begin to renegotiate their power supply contracts. In response to these concerns, the executive committee considered a range of options, including moderate options designed to retain Calm PUD as a member. Unfortunately, this suspected breach of trust is so serious and so pervasive that the executive committee felt it could not be repaired with Calm PUD remaining as a member. However, the executive committee also recognizes that the damaging actions of just one individual led to the expulsion decision. If the PUD's circumstances change in a manner that resolves PPC's concerns, we will welcome Calm PUD back without hesitation. We appreciate your understanding. It truly has been a pleasure working with you, Commissioner Will Purser, and your staff on the many substantive and complex issues Northwest Public Power faces today and in the future. Best regards as the chairman of PPC, which is Deborah Smith, who's also the general manager at Seattle City Light, and Scott Sims, who's the PPC executive director. And then they also a check that are attached a copy of the check that we got as a refund.
Sounds like a Dear John letter. Any discussion, or it's kind of a fait accompli, so.
Jim, you need to unmute. There you go.
Yeah, Doug, you finished with talking, or you got more stuff or what on this?
Well, I'm finished with that one particular, yes, that particular letter, initial letter.
All right. Well, let me point out some stuff here. You know, the PPC sent a letter. They also sent a memorandum, which I had not seen until Friday, and that really wasn't proper not to give me that 2 months ago when it was written, if you've had it that long or ever had it. So we've got 30 pages of a dossier from Public Power Council just on and on and on about how I broke some trust and confidentiality and have accused without really any evidence that I organized and perpetuated a march or protest at the PPC and at Bonneville Power. You know, and I think a lot of people have been asking me about this, both within the PUD community, of course, and also our ratepayers out there, the members of Clallam County PUD. And I think it's important to, because I think an issue here is this issue of confidentiality, transparency, and the ability of a PUD or commissioner or anybody to look at what PPC is saying or any other organization and have an effective dialogue over that. And I think it's important to put this into context. And, you know, Will and Doug, maybe you remember 3 or 4 years ago, I would come in on 2 or 3 occasions. I would, in my public comments to the board, point out some financial issues with BPA or the Corps of Engineers. And you guys didn't have much to say, although at one of the meetings, Will, you and Ted Simpson were whispering back and forth about something called the PPC. And I didn't know who that was, but I did what any due diligent person would do, is I looked up PPC on the website and saw what they were. And I said, well, let me go talk to these guys. So I went down there and met Scott Cronin and Mike Dean and Shane Scott and all these guys down there. And I presented my case and, you know, the numbers from the government, the Corps of Engineers numbers, and they were pretty credulous. They really weren't interested in hearing what I had to say. And I came back a second time and provided more information. And basically they didn't like one of my sources. And so just, you know, basically threw the whole thing out. And I think, the point there is that you can find out a lot about PPC by looking at their website and just Googling around. But then over the course of once becoming a commissioner since January 2019, this whole issue with the information that PPC is basically talking about is generally or 99% in the public domain to start with. Of course, it's BPA information, NOAA, Corps of Engineers, et cetera. And so a lot of this has already been talked about. A lot of this has already been worked on. And I, of course, over those years and since becoming a commissioner, have talked to a lot of people about the financial aspects of BPA, about the Lower Snake Dams and a whole range of issues. And, you know, and the fact that PPC staff were a part of that discussion, because when I would come back to one of our BOC meetings and report on PPC meetings, I would often mention, we talked to Mike and so forth. And, of course, the PPC staff came to one of our BOC meetings in January and with Scott and two other staffers and talked about a lot of stuff. And there was a room full of public folks there, too, listening to all this, and they weren't very impressed with all that, by the way. The other thing I would point out is, Doug, as you recall, I kept you pretty well informed of what I was doing on the outside just to keep the line straight, and also with our attorney at the time, about presentations I was making and so forth. I, of course, asked a lot of meetings at the PPC meetings and would talk to them on the sidelines and so forth. But I have to say that in most cases, their implication in their letter was that they're willing to talk and so forth. And these were not very comfortable conversations. They were very testy with me. They did not appreciate the fact that I had pointed out stuff in a meeting or so forth and about some of their fact sheets. I also had other members of the PPC refuse to even look at data I presented. And then when this issue about the 2019 cold snap surfaced, and that kept being talked about, and I kept pointing out people that the generation data does not support the role of the Lower Snake Dams in that cold snap, nobody would believe me. And then, Doug, you got a paper or an email from the PPC and that you sent to myself and the other commissioners, and I don't know who else. And I said, and it was dealing with that cold snap, and I said, you know, hey, this deserves a response because this is inaccurate. The generation data does not support that. I got a little help from a guy downloading the data, Tony Jones over in Idaho, and we put together a paper and came back and gave it to you, and you sent it back to PPC. And then they went out on the, you know, they looked at that and they looked up Tony. They knew who he was. They went out on the website and pulled off a document that we didn't use, I didn't use, and basically it told us in a letter and in a fact sheet. Well, I'm not sure they sent us a letter back. Yeah, maybe they did, an email. But in a fact sheet in February, they pointed out that this wasn't credible information, that Jones's was fundamentally flawed in terms of his understanding of pricing and so forth. And yet that's not even the issue we brought up. But they threw the baby out with the wash on that one. And so I don't know if that was disclosure of confidential information if you sent it to me. And they were well aware. And that was an email to them. Send that out to the world. Afterwards, we later posted that on this website that I use sometime, or I use then since. The paper, that February fact sheet, and I don't know if I'm even supposed to be talking about it according to their rules, also talked about a financial analysis that they had done, and they said that they had been using BPA and core data and so forth, and in terms of what the cost of the Snake River dams were, and they put in that paper $50 million for total O&M, and capital was estimated at 30, so a total of 80. And yet I knew that was our FOIA request. We did another FOIA request about a week ago and came up with, the Corps did a good job. They gave me the full-blown spreadsheet with all the costs of the Lower Snake Dams for the last 7 or 8 years. And once again, this is doing this over again just to make sure. Is that the prices, the cost of $80 million is underestimated by an average of $40 million a year. And those costs do not include BPA's overheads, nor do they include fish and wildlife costs. So we're looking at a lot more money that actually can be tagged to the Snake River dams. And it's sort of ironic that $40 million loss that I can identify using the Corps' numbers, it's kind of like what we got in the surcharge. Is that coincidence? Or is the fact that BPA is paying more for those dams than they understand they are is the problem? So anyway, that's just one more example of the kind of thing that we should be looking at. We just can't accept when somebody gives us something, and in my case, I can look at it and say, wait a minute, that doesn't look right. And then we spend the time to go figure this stuff out at great expense. The fact sheet also claimed about this peaking power business, about $400 million worth of value based on 2,600 megawatts of peaking power, which is not possible on these dams or almost any river dams. Of course, I wrote a paper on that, had some help with a few people, and also included in draft EIS comments about all this. And I gave them that paper on April the 13th, pointing out the fallacy. And that's the same day, five hours later, we got this letter you just read expelling us from the PPC. Gee, was that a coincidence or not? Doug, I think I told you back in December, January, that I was compelled to stand up a nonprofit in order to raise money to help with this analytical work because you said you didn't have a staff, we don't have a staff, and I don't have nor the expertise that I do, so I just have to do it. Of course, that's Dan Sense, and they put our charter into this dossier of information in this memo that is provided there. And, I said, fine, great, because I think if you read it, what does it say? It says to educate, and that's what Dan Sense does, and that's what I do on the outside. When I speak, I go to educate. I don't go to, stir up and make people fearful or anything. Now, to this March thing, business, back in March, I was invited to speak at the BP. And part of the reason is I go there to educate and inform, and indeed I had to correct some of the previous speaker's testimony because they were off on some statements. And part of my presentation was focused on the draft EIS because it had just come out. And a lot of people were asking me there about that EIS, and I did say that they asked me about BPA's position because we're standing in front of BPA on this, and when they were asking me this, and I said, well, I don't know for sure what their position is, but maybe I'll find out because Elliot Meinzer is going to be a speaker at the PPC meeting. Yeah, I said that. People heard it. I'm not even sure who I said that to, who asked that question and who was listening to that. But I got to ask a question. When is it a secret about a federal official coming to a meeting? I don't know. And when does the secrecy end? When does the confidentiality end? Before, after, what? I don't know. See, this is what's has been a real dilemma with the PPC, unlike some of the other organizations we deal with, is this suppression. And it really is, it's bothersome. It makes you worry whether you're stepping out of line all the time. So anyway, that's probably where the idea that Meister was going to be at this meeting. So be it. If I'm guilty of that, fine. But an official talking at a public meeting is not supposed to be a secret. I also noted that in their dossier they had photographs. Well, I love the photograph of me holding the salmon, save money, save salmon, save orcas, and all that kind of stuff from 4 years ago. So I don't know what their intent was of putting that into this. I wasn't holding up a sign at this thing. And I also noticed that one of our ratepayers there, Christine Reed, was identified with something that she did. I have nothing to do with that or Christine in terms of what she says or what she presents at these things. So I don't know why that's in there. But that's just more of this incredible amount of work that they went to try to build a case of, that I'm somehow, this evil. Anyway, I was in the area and providing information to the marchers leading up to the PPC meeting on Wednesday and Thursday since I was on out there. And yes, when I was looking at the PPC documents in the company of a Corps of Engineers fisheries biologist who's an expert on pitipeds and salmon and orcas and all that kind of stuff. And I pointed out what the PPC was saying and that we needed to address that. And there was other people that heard that, so that's probably where they got the idea to put on a sign that says, hey, Elliot or whoever, Mike, Dean, Sean, Scott, or whatever, that, hey, don't blame it on the SEALs. The next day the organizer, in fact, asked me if they could come to the PPC meeting. I said, well, no, it's not a public meeting. And then called it a secret meeting. I said, no, it's not a secret meeting. It's just not public. Anyway, and they asked for the agenda, and I wouldn't give it to them. And I probably was wrong. I think as a public official, when somebody asked me for something that I have as an elected official, I ought to be able to give it to them, but I didn't, and I probably was wrong about that. So anyway, I had nothing to do with organizing the rally or the march and all that kind of stuff, but the idea here is to try to educate with government data, and that's basically what I've been doing for years. And so really the only time I discussed, other than what I just mentioned, quote, confidential information or something is what I just noted above. One other time when about this February time frame, there was also some language in one of their fact sheets about southern resident killer whales or prey resources and stuff like that that I didn't think was accurate. And I did send extracted that three or four sentences out of the PPC document and sent it to the Center or Whale Research, who is the federally funded researchers who know the most about this. They provided me a response, but I didn't even get a chance to send that to PPC or anybody else because just got hung up with all kind of other stuff. So really, what's this all about? And what are they, you know, really after? And if anything was concerned about sharing, you know, info, you know, it bothers me that I feel almost guilty about coming back to my own board and talking about that. That's the kind of the guilt that these guys were putting on me, is even talking to at our board of commissioners, to our public, to our ratepayers. It was always a testy moment for me because I felt like, oh, gee, am I supposed to be able to do this or not? Anyway, I don't think that I shouldn't, any member should not have to fear disclosing information that we paid for. And I also note that other associations, and particularly one of them, when asked about sharing information like this that they prepare based on vulnerable information, their answer was, heck, you paid for it. You do what you want with it. Please share it. So, you know, the same kind of information, two completely different kinds of interpretations. I also kind of note, you know, you say that this was COVID. We couldn't talk about this because of COVID, but my fellow commissioner, Mr. Purser, Commissioner Purser, had no qualms about bringing this up at the WAPUTA meeting, the roundtable, when we were talking about COVID and about all we talked about. He didn't get much of a reaction out of that, in fact, none. But then Senator Sheldon, the following Friday at the executive board, brought it up and basically was calling me my behavior deplorable. And that got a rise out of some of the other commissioners. And I stopped that discussion by pointing out that Auerbach had not discussed this, which I think is the first thing that needs to happen. Kind of like we're finally doing now. So thanks, Doug, for getting us up on the table here. You know, Will, you said, well, we haven't had a meeting. So, yeah, and here we are 2 months, 3 months later, and we're now talking about it. So I think that I pointed out at that WAPUTA meeting, I didn't organize that, that protest or the march or anything like that. And I think, following a few days after that, I get a call from a reporter from the Clearing Up magazine wanting me to interview me about this expulsion deed. And I was kind of surprised. I said, how did you know about it? He said, well, I heard about it. I got a letter. And he told me he had the letter from PPC to Clallam County PUD. Now, I thought that was really unusual. Talk about disclosure. Where did you get that letter? And he said, from an executive committee member of the Public Power Council. So I find that rather, you know, that kind of hypocritical that, you know, I'm getting criticized for talking about on a few occasions, and, you know, stuff that I didn't even send out. I may call people on the phone and ask them a few questions here and there, is primarily because, you know, there's no emails out there which says I did all this stuff. And they called you too, Will, and I think they called a couple other people and wrote an article. And I guess, you know, even, you know, and then my fellow commissioner accused me of conducting an ATIFA move on the PPC, which I didn't appreciate the time, did not appreciate at the time. And I think that's really unfair because, Commissioner Purser, I hope you realize through this discussion that you probably have overreacted in terms of my role and what I was doing at this thing. We didn't talk about it until now. I noticed Jefferson PUD had no qualms about talking about this on May the 5th, and I think if you listen to their dialogue about this subject, you'll find that, you know, that there really wasn't much cause for dismissal. But then Friday you sent me this additional memo that I just mentioned, another 20-page dossier with all kind of stuff. And you pointed it out and you held that up because of the governor's proclamation. That doesn't apply to letters. Maybe I you know, you said it on the meetings, but to a letter, I don't think so. How does all this stuff really stack up against PPC claims of evidence as suggested? that they have a strong case of, you know, me being this person that broke their confidentiality. But you know what? It really doesn't matter. The point is, we don't need to be paying to use ratepayer money to pay money to an organization that fears external disclosure, as stated in the PPC letter. And I think that's really what's at issue here. Do our ratepayers want to, you know, we pay PPC $30,000 a year. And then to have such a, to be, them resist, you know, the kind of background that I have and the work that I've done, and to try to, you know, point out what issue, point out discrepancies that ultimately benefit ratepayers if we can save money with some of these assets. Anyway, that's the background. Now, Doug, I sent you a draft letter that I suggested that you send to PPC in response to the letter that you read, which we owe them. You said you talked to them on the phone, but I was not privy to that conversation. One thing I noted in the memo is they said they were working closely with the staff at the PUD back before they wrote this letter. So I don't know. You should have. I should have been included in that conversation since I was the one that, that was at the issue here, but I wasn't. So anyway, the draft letter is my recommendation that we send back to PPC. I don't know if you provided that to the other commissioners when I sent it to you a couple months ago, Doug?
No.
Okay. Well, then let me, based on the memo that we got here Friday, or I got, there's a couple of little editor changes I want to make to the letter that I sent you, the draft letter that I sent you. And I suggest you send it to the other two commissioners. And so my proposal is that we send this letter or this draft of this letter, and I'll appreciate your comment. But it basically follows with what I just said. And the key point is, should we be investing our money in an organization that that makes statements often without proper substantiation, and then when I provide or anybody provides proper substantiation, we're shot down? Because I think that's the real motivation here. Because there's not a lot. I mean, what did I really do that was so egregious in terms of a protest or a march or confidentiality? I've laid all that out. So anyway, that's what I suggest we do next step with this issue.
Okay. Well, I'd like to respond, Will, unless you want to put something first.
Well,
there's a lot to respond to.
There is. I'm not sure my memory can retain all that, but you know, I served on the executive committee at PPC for a long time, and I was privy to a lot of these conversations. There's a number of errors in what you said, Jim. First thing off, the PPC is not subject to Open Public Meetings Act. They're not subject to public records request. They're a regional organization. They're not subject to Washington laws or Oregon laws or whatever. Secondly, the data that they get from all of the data comes from the Corps of Engineers, from Bonneville Power Administration, from Reclamation, and on and on. They have a staff of legal experts, rate analysts. They have fish experts, and they don't agree with all that data, but they use that data to come to positions and so on. Now, your problem is you reject all of that data. You're the only one that has the real data, and they didn't accept that. And as far as supporting PPC, we're not supporting PPC. What we're doing is we are paying for a service. We are paying for all this analysis. And those meetings, they come up with strategy for negotiating with Bonneville, negotiating with different entities, any public power issue. And so if you disclose those positions beforehand, then you're putting them at a disadvantage, and you're putting us at a disadvantage. And as far as this thing of not bringing this out, it did not meet the necessary and routine definition that was put to us, number one.
Secondly, to be quite frankly, personally and as a utility, we're kind of embarrassed by the whole thing. So, you know, that, as far as responding to PPC, there is no appeal process. There is no appeal process. We can write all the letters we want. They might just put them in the square file. I would suspect you won't get any response from that. So, you know, it's a done deal. All right, Doug, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I just want to, you covered a lot of things, Jim, so let me see if I can try to catch most of them here. You know, here at Qualum PUD, I work for the customers through the commission and not just an individual commissioner. I work for all three of the commissioners. And majority is what I look for in going ahead. We hire organizations like PPC to watch out for our interests with BPA. And we're not alone. There's some 90 other utilities, PUDs, municipalities, co-ops that are in that group. So if we're making a big mistake, I guess all 90 of those are making a big mistake too. We've gotten great information and great networking with other utilities at PPC meetings, and now we're expelled from this. We're going to miss that interaction and association with the people that come to those meetings. There's over 100 people that show up, commissioners and general managers and staff. We're missing out on all that interaction now that we're expelled from PPC. And I don't know if it had ever happened in PPC's history that a utility was expelled, but I don't believe
it has not. It has not been. It's never happened before.
And this is something we did not want. We did not want this to happen. And, Jim, I should never have been put in this position. What you had done put me in this position. You had a number of conversations with our general counsel, Simon, and he told you that PPC was a private organization and they had a right for their work to be confidential. You continued to argue with him, and you brought this up a number of times. And unfortunately, it looks like you proceeded to do what you wanted without any consideration for Qualum PUD or our customers. I didn't know that I had to account for a commissioner that would not take the advice of our general counsel. And why did I hold off on the information and just give it up now? Well, I received a letter from the executive committee regarding our expulsion about a week after our first week into the COVID emergency. We were working on getting our employees working from home or staying home. There was a lot going on at the time, and we had no set guidelines to follow. Pandemics just aren't something that you look in the book and say, okay, this is how you handle a pandemic. So my top priority was on the employee and the public safety. That was where I was coming from. This was a much lower priority at the time. Regarding including executive committee memo in this package, this was a judgment call that our general counsel, Simon, agreed with, and I made. It was my decision. To my knowledge, there is no history, again, with any utilities that know how to handle this. I'm talking about the pandemic. We were expelled with the COVID, or we were expelled when the COVID outbreak was already underway. So again, this issue took a lower priority. I attempted to de-escalate the PPC issue and just move forward. But the elevation of this issue is due to the action and direction of you, even after long conversations you had with the head of PPC. You knew the reasons they were doing this, but you still wanted to bring it out more. After that conversation, you told me that that's a conversation you had with PPC, Scott Sims, that some of their possible intentions, because you didn't like that you couldn't distribute the confidential material. However, it was something that bothered you that you couldn't distribute it, and I understand that, but again, Simon made it real clear that PPC had the right to do that. They were not, a public utility or a public organization, and 90 other utilities, again, didn't seem to have a problem with that. On talking to me regarding removing a column. When PPC talked to me, it was just one or two times, and I tried to talk them out of it. Eventually, the die was cast regarding our removal. At first, they discussed just expelling you, Jim, from coming to the meetings, and that is what I thought they were going to do. Matter of fact, when they went into the executive committee, that's what they were talking about doing. But then the executive committee decided that they couldn't just expel you and not have you come to the meetings, which would allow us to still to get all the information, all the associations with other members. But they couldn't go that way. The executive committee decided they needed to let everybody or let Clallam completely out. And PPC in their discussions with me and in the letters that we received, emphasized that it wasn't your position on the Lower Snake River dams that they objected to, but the loss of trust and confidentiality of the members with you for sharing confidential documents with others. Regarding the studies, your economic studies may have been good 20, 30 years ago regarding Lower Snake River dams. I don't know. I don't know that information, but I do know that four organizations, Northwest Power Planning and Conservation Council, the Northwest Power Pool and Public Generating Pool, the Northwest Energy Coalition, the Northwest River Partners, Public Power Council, and BPA, they all had different methodologies in looking at this, all the Lower Snake River Dam items. And they all came to the same conclusions that the Lower Snake River Dam should stay. This is hard to ignore. It's hard for me to ignore. I've got 45 years of direct utility experience, and some of that was with hydro and other utilities. I have not looked at the details of this, but all these organizations are saying that they should stay. I was at that March meeting where you had mentioned about when we lost or the high prices because of BPA. And PPC had three individuals there, an individual from Clark Power that was, I think, 35-year in charge of power, in charge of dispatching, I'm sorry. And they also had one, I believe, from Benton, and then had one from BPA. All three of those men were very credible and kind of, I believe, was saying things that there was a unique situation that occurred, but you kept believing that it was something that they were kind of, it was just kind of like a cover-up is the impression that I got. And even these organizations that I meant, even the Northwest Energy Coalition, which advocates for dam removals, finding replacement power costs, they claim, would be over $400 million per year. So even one that advocates for moving the dams is still saying that it would be a very high cost. And additionally, which you know, but maybe not all the viewers here know, is that over 30-plus PUDs and municipalities and co-ops have passed resolutions to support the Snake River dams. I know you found things in each of them that you feel is incorrect. However, that doesn't mean it's all incorrect. It's kind of like you were saying about throwing a baby out with the bathwater. A lot of these 30-plus utilities passed resolutions to support the Snake River dams. So it's something that keeps on popping up. With the EIM, with California EIM and BPA looking at joining the EIM, with the CETA, the Washington CETA, requiring that all coal and eventually all fossil fuel to be removed by 2045, there'll be a large lack of resources during that time period. And I believe that all clean, renewable hydro will be in high demand. Now, one last thing regarding the salmon. I don't know. There are many variables that may impact the issue other than dams. noise interference by vessels, whale watching they talk about, ocean pollution, water temperature, overfishing. Even in the Straits here, we know that Victoria has been dumping their pollution into the Straits for many years. All these things go into the decision, many variables. I don't think we know the solution. It may be a combination of them. As you know, and you brought up the draft environmental impact statement, spells this all out, and they came up with a preferred alternative. And the preferred alternative does not include removing the dams. And this was a group from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Bureau of Reclamation, and BPA in cooperation with 30 other entities. Even NOAA, the organization that's concerned with fish, even they have a newsletter out that says Southern Resident Killer Whales and the Snake River Dams. They talk about, do killer whales distinguish between hatchery and natural spawn salmon? Killer whales appear to select salmon based on their species and size, preferring larger Chinook salmon. There is no evidence that they distinguish between wild from hatchery fish. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know about the fish, and I don't know about the economics, but it's hard for me as a utility manager here to see all these organizations that are saying how valuable the dams are, and then one person to say they're all screwed up and it's not right. You put us in a position that I don't want to be in. I would like to support you, but I have a lot of other organizations that are not agreeing with you.
Let me just add a couple of things. Were you done, Doug?
Yeah, I think so. I tried to cover most of the things that Jim had brought up.
Can we hear from Let me just say one additional thing. The root cause of this problem is, Jim, you're kind of obsessed with the Snake River dams. PPC has a lot of other issues, and in fact, more important issues than we don't sit there and talk about the Snake River dams. That's first. And secondly, the Snake River dams are important to the hydro system, I think, for all the reasons that have been discussed, EIS and so on. But to this utility, it's not a make it or break it thing. So, you know, we're spending too much time on this issue, and Jim, that's because it is your central issue. You represent Dam Sense everywhere you go, and you should be representing this utility and our customers.
Well, let me say something, but I would like to hear, you know, give Dave a chance, but just to kind of clarify a few things, Will. You know, you said I reject all the data that PPC sends out. No, that's not true. You know that. But why do you say that? There's a lot of things that PPC is engaged with, energy imbalance market and so forth, that I engage with and listen to. And I've given them given them compliments on some of the work. Some of their biology, when they corrected it, I complimented them on. So I think this is not just, your statements are kind of hyperbole, frankly. The LPs are, they're not my only thing. That's not the reason the only reason I exist or the only thing I want to talk about. But it is an issue that has been brought up through various mechanisms, including some of our own people who have, you know, ratepayers that, you know, suggested that we address this issue. The one thing that, you keep, you know, pretending, yeah, I'm only one person, but let's, you know, Doug, you were reading basically the script from Northwest River Partners, stuff they put out. The PPC put out the same thing. You're basically reading their stuff. You've admitted over and over again that you really, and you just did now, that you don't understand all these issues. And that's fair. But, you know, you're also talking to a person that was with the Corps of Engineers for 35 years. I was a deputy district engineer in Walla Walla. I did manage a $33 million feasibility study on those four dams. I managed hydro projects in the Columbia River, on the Snake River, and elsewhere in the basin. And I've spent thousands of hours in the meantime reading government documents. This FOIA request, these are real numbers. This is not me making this stuff up. This is Corps of Engineer data. Listen, this is math. And so what you guys look at is just my opinion, one against many. No, what we're not doing, what's happening here, people don't want to look at the truth here. And this data, whether it's this data or even the NOAA data, like on their 2017 Spring Summer Chinook Recovery Plan, what does it say in there, down, buried in? It says recovery of these salmon are not possible the way we're doing it now. All the actions, all the habitat, all that is not going to work. And so, you act like I'm the only one. I am bringing up government information that hundreds of people support. The problem is we've got this group. PPC is one of them. River Partners is another one. They have a fixation on keeping dams at all costs. And all I'm asking, all I'm demanding is that, and by looking at this data, is do we really want to accept that? Do we really want to accept the fact that these dams are costing anywhere from $40 to $60 million or more a year just in direct cost than the PPC says they do? And they claim they're using BPA data when BPA doesn't even know how to get up these numbers. So I don't tell me that it's me and I'm the only one. Yes, I'm the only one going up against PPC and Northwest River Partners, since you mentioned them. But let's face it, the stuff that they put out, and how can you sit there? John Purvis has looked at the Peaking Power paper. Have you guys read that thing? And he doesn't disagree with that. He can see the fact that, no, you cannot get 2,600 megawatts of peaking power out of a run of river dams, particularly the Snake River dams. The Corps of Engineers did the analysis, 15 megawatts, not 2,600. This stuff is just basically wishful thinking, and it's unsubstantiated. I've asked for the substantiation for those numbers, and no one gives them to me because they're not there. And so this is not just some just irrational kind of position of mine. I am bringing forward government information, and people who don't want to look at it, I can understand why. It's easier not to and just continue on with the status quo. And, oh, by the way, you keep talking about, these groups talking about the coal closure and stuff like this. And what did BPA's most recent power resource program analysis for 2020 say? It said it changed from 2018, flat demand for the next 10 years. So, tell me, and actually it's not so much BPA saying this stuff, it's the association saying this stuff. And so that is why, that's our responsibility, the ratepayers, is to ask these tough questions. And if it offends people, if it makes them a little upset, it makes them uncomfortable, and gee, just, we haven't heard that in 54 years, well, I guess it's so be it. Because it's time we get into this stuff and start paying attention to it and start doing the analysis. And yet if I have to do it all by myself, I guess I'll just keep doing that. And so, when you say confidentiality, and Will, you said it, is that the PPC is not subject to the disclosure laws. Maybe not. But, I am. And so when I get information, what am I? Hey, I'm an elected official. And so am I supposed to keep it secret? Am I supposed to not talk about it? And that's pretty much what I've done, because of all this claim about sending documents out. I didn't email these documents to anybody. One paragraph in one of them that came out of one of those fact sheets I sent to Ken Balcom. That's it. So, this is really a gross overstatement anyway, that, I'm sending all this stuff all over the place. The other thing is that and I discussed this too with when I come back and talk about this to the Board of Commissioners in a public meeting, that's my responsibility to do that. If I've got issues, I should share that. When do I talk about that with my other two commissioners? It can only be in a public meeting. So that's why it has to be public. And so the idea that this is confidential and it's not subject to disclosure laws, maybe for them, but it's not for me and the other commissioners. So I'd like to let Dave weigh in. I apologize. you know, stepping in front of you, Dave, if you wanted to say something.
No, I don't think you're stepping in front of me. I just sent up my notes back, I think it was April, is about the time we actually got the letter from PPC, and Doug circulated it, and you know, I guess I was shocked that there wasn't more deliberation somewhere along the line, and I don't know how the blow-by-blow went between the early March meeting and the letter going out a month later, but I don't know if they gave Will an opportunity to defend Clallam PUD among the rest of the executive committee or how it all worked, but you know, it's pretty shocking just to see that it seemed to come out of the blue. So that was my initial reaction, and then I guess I, you know, just from an overall standpoint of dam management and power management, look at the federal dams is not really getting the asset analysis and asset management that investor-owned utility dams and non-federal public utility dams are subject to, having come from a background where, you know, asset management was always high priority. So yeah, I think I agree that, yeah, we need to make sure that whatever numbers we're looking at make sense. And I'd say I'm looking forward to the Department of Commerce and Public Power Pool's resource adequacy studies that we'll hopefully see some results from within 2020 and be able to juxtapose some real numbers for the Lower Snake River dams. But I guess as far as getting back to the letter, as far as the Waputa board meeting the following week where it was brought up that, you know, we had been expelled from the PPC, I think you mentioned, Jim, that Senator Shelton condemned your actions or something along those lines. But I guess I look at my notes, and I think the response that I noted from the board meeting was that Bruce Jorgensen, a commissioner from Mason, was actually the person that condemned, you know, basically what he alleged to be your actions there. Well, Senator Sheldon actually was appeared to be about as shocked as I was, and his reaction was, well, you know, why didn't anybody find out about this till now? And his response at that point was to plan to bring it up at the next Energy Northwest meeting to see if he could get more information on it, if there was any recourse. A similar response also registered at that meeting from Commissioner Jim Malinowski from Clark PUD. So I think, you know, among the attendees at that meeting, I think there was, appeared to me, other than Commissioner Jorgensen, there seemed to be a lot of support for, you know, doing what anybody could to help Clallam make a case for getting back in or whatever. But again, this is a private organization that it's not subject to laws or anything that require that you're innocent until proven guilty or anything like that. So I think, as Will has mentioned earlier in this discussion, it's not like we really have an opportunity to appeal this. So that's you know, my reaction to all this at this point.
Yeah, and a couple of things. Jim, you brought up that they were talking to staff. Basically, as a member of the executive committee of PPC, I put Irene, who's their lead attorney, they have a number of people with law degrees down there, in touch with Simon, and we're looking at the legal aspects of it. I tried very diligently to mitigate this thing, to get it so that, in fact, I'd be quite honest, I was surprised when we had an executive session of the executive committee at PPC, and overwhelmingly, they just wanted to boot Clallam out. I mean, that was it. I pushed for lesser measures and so on, but nope, you're gone. So, anyway.
Yeah, and I might mention that those weren't talking points, and you mentioned Public Power Council and Northwest River Partners, but there was also those other organizations, Northwest Power Planning and Conservation Council, and Northwest Power Pool and Public Generating, Northwest Energy Coalition. They all. I mean, a lot of these organizations have taken the information that you had given them, Jim. They looked at it, and they didn't agree with it. I mean, eventually, when someone keeps coming back over and over again, when you've looked at what they have to say, eventually you don't pay attention to them.
Can I point out something? Not one of those groups that you're talking about ever came back to me and explicitly said, this is where your numbers are wrong. Yes, I've heard from some people, not by group, but some people that say, well, you don't have it right. You know, you're not credible. You're not this. And I say, fine, show me where you're talking about. I'm not getting that. And I think a big part of the reason is because they don't really have, they're not looking at the data. They're looking at the PR spin on this stuff. And frankly, that's what we've got to get below. And so it's there's a lot of people that don't agree with what I say, but they're not giving me anything in return. There's nobody that's refuted that Peking Power paper. The only way that the PPC was, you know, call me discreditable on this cold snap paper is by citing a paper that had nothing to do with what we wrote them and then throwing it out. So let's be careful when we say that these groups all disagree with me. I say, fine, let them disagree, but let them show me, give me the analytical work. And even the draft EIS on that 2,600 megawatts, I've had several experts look at that statement of how that generation was calculated. No one can understand it.
But Jim, you can't expect these one commissioner in a relatively small utility. These organizations have, like Doug mentioned, 90 members at the PPC, and they're all the way from Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Northern California. They're not just going to drop everything and spend staff time trying to refute your numbers, especially when the numbers that they use are coming from the experts and from the people that really do the work. So, you know, that's not realistic. And just an additional thing, Dave mentioned resource adequacy. I'm on a resource adequacy task force, and the comment that's been made about the Snake River Dams is that all of the data, all of the information about removing the dams is history. It's looking backwards. With the passage of CETA, the Clean Energy Transition Act, doing away with all fossil fuels and all that, a non-carbon producing resource like Snake River Dams will become more valuable and may require some investment. So, you know, it's good to look at history and all that, but you can't go back and look at old studies and try to justify present day circumstances.
Well, Will, looking at old studies, what you look at is the actual data off these dams. And there's three kind of relevant things that apply here. One is generation data. When do the megawatts, how many megawatts and when do they produce? What kind of year? What does it cost to produce that megawatt from those dams? And that's where I, you know, basically try to point out over and over again that these cost numbers that we're getting from PPC and even BPA, because BPA doesn't understand how the full cost of these things are. They don't know I don't know why they can't ask the Corps what I did, but they don't. And the third thing is, what is the price we're getting for this power? And that's a tough one, because that can be all kind of prices for all different things, whether it's secondary market, which can be negotiated, or spot market. That's all tough stuff. But the bottom line is that BPA has been hemorrhaging cash. And we know the Snake River Dams are one of the most expensive assets in spite of what BPA says. And, they are relatively more expensive than the other big dams, but the bottom-up cost on these dams is a lot. So I appreciate that, you know, you're on this resource adequacy stuff and so forth, and you call it history, but it doesn't – the amount of water in that river and the fact there's 24 turbines and this is their head, that doesn't change – because it's in the future, all right? You can't get more water out of those things. And yes, I would love to see some real analytical work that says, you know, here is within the BPA authority area what those dams can produce versus BPA demand loads and so forth like that. and that should come out in the next power plan. The other thing is, though, this is what's really important, at what cost? Because what we've seen historically, and we don't think this is going to change in the future because of the Run River nature of those dams, is that the amount of power that the critical need can be bought on the open market by keeping those four dams in place. And that's why it's important to look at this information. And I guess what I'll say is this conversation, I didn't mean to get into this kind of depth into this, but you guys have taken it there. In my comments, I was going to talk in my commissioner comments the fact that we have requests from ratepayers to write a letter, to do some kind of resolution on the Lower Snake Dams. And I guess what the best thing to do is to really go through the points on this thing, because we're jumping around. It's sometimes at hyperbole, and then we dive down to an issue over here, but then jump over there. And so this is a really convoluted conversation. And I would suggest that we go ahead and, to satisfy the requests we've been getting from some of our customers, that we basically have a more formalized discussion along these lines. And I can do that. I can point out this stuff and show you the data, and you guys can say, no, this is what somebody else says, and here's why, and here's their numbers. That's fine with me. But I think that needs to be done. But back to the PPC thing, the draft I wrote, I wasn't asking for us to be reinstated unless we have a frank discussion about this whole issue about that I've made the point of is how can we pay for this information and use it if we can't talk about it? And so, or share it. And I don't mean share it wholesale. No one's done that. But if I can't bring it back and talk to it with our ratepayers and dialogue, and if we've got concerns and say, hey, I need to get some help someplace or go talk to somebody, and I write a paper or something on it, that's fine. But, you know, I think that the idea that we're paying money, we're paying them to do this work, and yet we're so restricted that they're willing to throw somebody else. And you said it, expel us, right. And why did they do that? Because I sent another paper up there telling them their peaking power claim was wishful thinking. It's funny that it happened the same day. But anyway, and I haven't heard back on that. They haven't said a word. And so, come on. What's the deal here? So the letter I wrote, basically, I accept their expulsion, but not for the reasons they said. What they really are after, and the reason they're so adamant about throwing us out and me out, is they just don't want to hear any more of this discussion. And they don't want these numbers thrown up in front of them. And so be it. So why should we be a member of an organization like that?
Well, I guess my response is it adds value. We have a place at the table. You can't influence the whole public power community by being an outlier. And, Jim, that's what you've more or less made us.
One organization.
Well, that's not true. It's a huge organization. Actually, when we, on the Executive Board of Energy Northwest, we talked about here a couple of years ago of providing bond financing to Bonneville, $3.6 billion. You know who we went to for an opinion on that? We went to the PPC. So, they're huge in public power. And to just kind of denigrate them and all their information's wrong and they've got all these conspiracies.
All their information.
Well, all right, but you're saying that there's some kind of conspiracy here. There's no conspiracy. There's just open dialogue. And you would get further rather than making demands and being so adamant in one position by participating in that dialogue.
I've offered to participate. I tried to participate.
All right. Okay, Jim.
They have offered to come and meet with them. Nope.
Okay. Okay, are we done with that item?
Yeah.
I guess so.
There's nothing really to be done. We can't. We're no longer in the PPC.
Yeah, I'm disappointed that we're not a member of PPC. I think we got a lot of important information from, especially going into negotiations. They were a valuable asset, not only just from PPC, but from all the utilities that are sitting in that meeting. You don't just sit there quietly. You talk to the guy next to you. You talk to the guys all around you, and you find out what they're doing. It's a valuable organization that we were. It was a valuable for us to be a member. And you know, Jim, I'm sorry, but you know, Simon was really clear with you a number of times about the privacy and the confidentiality, and you just I understand what you're saying. But there is certain things that are private and confidential, and like negotiations would be one good example. But there'd be other good examples, and people like Elliot Mazur, who's the head of Bonneville, they were reluctant to come to the meetings and share everything with PPC members because they're afraid others were going to be finding out different things. So there are some confidential information that does and should stay in that meeting.
Well, Doug, the thing is, and I have discussed this with Simon and others, is that other commissioners, is the fact that when a commissioner receives information, I am subject to disclosure laws. And if somebody asks me to provide something, I don't. Really is, you know, okay, if we were negotiating the exact price or something that we were going to, you know, deal with, but that's, we're not talking about that kind of stuff. So for them to put a blanket confidentiality statement on everything they, or I guess everything they put out, is really overreach. And I've been through this in the government before and pointed this out from time and time again. And yes, and people have had to reel it back in and say, no, let's stick the confidentiality on stuff that really is. Like personnel issues, like maybe that letter that the PPC sent us, and you know, and why did an executive committee send it to the press? Who's talking about that? Does that not care? Does anybody care about that? But anyway, I really don't care. But what I do care about is that as an elected official, I have responsibilities to inform the public. And so, if we are so constrained that everything that, or virtually everything that comes out of the PPC is considered confidential, then it's, what do we just pay these guys and they tell us and we just sit there and go, okay, fine?
I don't believe everything coming out of them is confidential. Things you can get off of BPA websites, not confidential. It's the things that they work out together and that they put together that's confidential.
Every bit of it.
Pardon?
All those purple and all these documents here that they were handing out is all confidential.
I guess if we don't agree with that, we should have went to the membership of PPC and see if we should get that changed. I mean, what you're saying is that what I'm saying and Simon's saying is we have to obey the law. And if you think that it doesn't matter, you know, I don't agree with that. It does matter.
Tell me what law.
Well, Simon told you. Simon spent a lot of time,
talks about what PPC is. If they write something, it could be proprietary information. On the other hand, once we pay for it and once it's in the hands of elected officials, then the question is it really confidential?
Is that what Simon told you?
Yeah.
He told you that is confidential. He didn't tell you it wasn't confidential.
He said, listen, I have a right to disclose stuff if I get it.
Not if it's against the law.
What law says that a statement concerning the amount of the dollar value of power coming off of or the cost of the Snake River dams is $50 million. Where is that? Why is that confidential?
You're picking one instance. He's not talking about that.
About the $2,600 megawatts.
Okay. I think we're not getting
anywhere with this. One of the consequences of – you keep talking about Jim. You keep talking about PPC being elected officials. You know, I was one of two elected officials on that executive committee, overwhelmingly they're general managers, and Scott Sims likes that. That's what he wants. I was replaced with a general manager from Cowlitz. So, you know, another consequence of this whole thing is now we don't have elected officials on the executive committee of PPC. And you may not care, but I do, because I know the discussions that went on, the value that was added to public power. But
well, let's move on.
Let me just correct it. I care a lot about the fact that there aren't more elected officials on the PPC executive committee. I think it should be all.
Yeah. Well, okay. I don't think we're getting anywhere with this. I think we've pretty well talked about all the issues and so on. And like I say, it's kind of it's a feat accompli. We're out of PPC. If you want to go back and challenge them or their legality or whatever,
I'm not challenging them. I think we just answer the mail, but I don't think you guys are going to want to sign a letter that I write.
Okay, let's take a break. Let's keep it to about 5 minutes, and we'll come back after that.
I'm joking. Go ahead.
Is everybody back online or anybody back online?
I'm here.
Well, that's what counts, Dave. You and I will just finish the meeting.
Got a quorum, right?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you can see my picture. That means I'm here.
Yeah, I see you, Jim. Jim, I think it's important just to have an open, frank discussion about this stuff. There's no sense, you know. And I'm
glad we're talking about it finally, Will.
Well, I hope you didn't take offense at anything, but, you know, it just...
Oh, I don't mind being associated with Antifa, particularly when Trump declares them a terrorist agency. Fine. But when the FBI comes, I'm going to call you up and you tell them it was a mistake.
Calling me might be a mistake. I'd say, yeah, he's one of those.
See, Commissioner Waddell, you've got to be careful who you pick for your friends. Right?
That's for sure.
Okay, where is everyone? Doug has the next item, so we'll just have to wait a bit, I suppose.
Well, for those in the main office, they probably have to wait in line for the bathroom to maintain social distancing, right?
That's right. I'm in my bunker at an undisclosed location.
Yeah, I was going to ask where you are.
Well, yeah, we're back now. You going to do it? Okay. All right. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and reconvene then. Well, I can't get I don't have enough broadband at my place to do video conferencing, so I came into the office and they put me in a vacant room. So, Sean, who do we have back on? Do we have...
Looks like we're just missing Doug.
I'm here.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, let's reconvene. Next item is correspondence and communications, COVID-19 customer support programs. Doug, that's your item.
Yeah, this is a... program that came out here just recently. It's COVID-19 customer support program and it's assistance to residential and or businesses as a result of the COVID-19 hardships. Jim actually has a meeting, was supposed to be Friday, but I think they changed it to Wednesday regarding this issue. I had a general manager's meeting with all the WAPUTA general managers last Friday. And in this letter for the program, we're working closely with WAPUTA in meeting the state requirements and considering the recommendations. Utilities are outraged with the governor's COVID-19 customer support programs. Utilities again see this program jumping on top of things that we're already doing. All the utilities believe that they're doing a great job. They even ahead of the governor's proclamations. The managers in the meeting, we believe that the customer support program was an overreach into local control in an attempt to, well, as you all know, one of the big benefits of public power is local control. And in this case, we have the governor overreaching into local control. And part of this package, he also has UTC, Washington Utility and Transportation Commission, into kind of watching over public power utilities. Once again, there always seems to be different times where they try to get into regulating us. So that's one thing that we pushed back for many, many years to keep UTC. They oversee the IOUs, so and not public power. We have elected officials that oversee the public power. So some of the things in the COVID-19 customer support program is the disconnects and late fees are suspended in accordance with state requirements through July 28th. I think right now we're looking at July 31st is what we're looking at. State has mandated utilities to develop a COVID-19 support program before July 10th. Again, we've already working towards this, and we don't think we need the state to basically watch over us, tell us what to do. And has the program reporting to the UTC, and that's a big one that the managers and I believe most of the commissioners have a problem with too. So kind of depending upon what comes out of Jim's meeting, the board meeting this Wednesday, we were planning on having a board review at one of the next two board meetings to go over all this in some detail. One of the things that we had agreed in the WAPUTA meeting, a number of utilities, including ours, if the commissioners are in agreement, and after we find out on Wednesday what's going forward, WAPUTA is planning to put out a letter to the governor, and we had a chance to look over that letter, and it was a good letter. I think all the commissioners probably got it too, or should have gotten it. So we're looking at each individual utility kind of putting out their own letter to the governor, letting them know how it impacts us because, you know, we're not all, it's not all sizes fit one, like most things that government kind of puts out. We would indicate, you know, how it impacts Clallam PUD. So basically that's kind of a summary of what we're looking at, and Jim will learn more about it on Wednesday when he attends that meeting.
Doug, I have a question.
Go ahead.
This document that's in our package, you said you were going to prepare some ideas or notes or something. Is that what I'm reading here with the COVID-19 Utility Customer Support Program, or whose document is this?
That's the document. I think that was a document from the governor. Let me see what's there.
Correct.
Okay, that's correct, yeah.
It doesn't have any identification on it.
That's just a download of the particular program itself.
Okay. You guys want to have any comments about what Doug just said? Because I guess I got an also view of this thing that is beyond this. It has more to do with the local situation, but let's talk about what is here first.
Well, we do have a number of things already going on, Jim. As you know, we the late fees and the disconnects. We're working with customers that aren't paying their bills. We're working with payment plans, giving them, stretching it out further than we've ever done before. What we're real concerned with is, you know, come next winter, if it goes on that long, and then the utility bills start going up, it'll put people in positions that it'll be hard to recover from. So we're trying to help our customers to get back in line and getting to pay their bills. You know, the employment's opening up again, and hopefully our customers and our small businesses and commercial can get back working and eventually work out a plan so it's not too onerous for them to pay their bills.
Um, when we talked about this at the last meeting, you said it pretty much exactly that, which is all good stuff. But it's kind of like the question is, in Clallam County here, like you said, everybody's got their unique needs. In discussions with the other government entities and businesses and so forth in the county, I think I want to, I mean, I've been talking to the Executive Development Council, and that's kind of one of the, we had a board meeting here a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, and they have been working really diligently with businesses. They've done a survey, you know, and it looks like 5 to 10% of the businesses are going to go out because they can't afford to stay in business. Some of those are our customers right now. So I guess what I'm looking for is two levels of things. No matter what anybody else does, whether it's the governor's office through this kind of stuff or the federal agencies through the CARES program grants or something or community block grant funds or whatever, what is it that we may want to take steps? And I mean, I'm looking, you know, kind of like let's step out of the box here. I mean, it's not every day we have a, you know, we shut down everything for two and a half months. And like you said, we may not be out of the woods on this thing yet. The county businesses are suffering. And I, you know, just had recent discussions with like Nathan West with the city who's in charge of this utility group with these various grants that are coming along. So that's what do we just – what ideas do we have on number one? Then number two is the I know you were in a conversation with some folks maybe last week on these community grant block grants and so forth and how those can work. I also was like the idea that the group has about one entity going in for some of these grants and do the application once and then split up the money. And that way it reduces the overhead. And it also makes it a lot easier if we administer a program or some kind that it, we can make it easy on our customers, kind of like Port Angeles, as the city of Port Angeles has done. So anyway, I guess that's what I'd like some discussion about.
Okay, that was going to be part of one of the, even though it's not listed, one of the staff reports. I was going to give you a little update on talking with Nathan at the city and the other city managers about these block grants. So I can, you know, I can do that now or I can do that coming up here in a few minutes.
Doesn't matter.
So which report's going to cover this? Is that Shell?
In on this.
Yeah, this kind of is different than the COVID-9 customer support plan, but it's what Jim's talking about is it's a way for us to try to look at getting grants to help some lower-income individuals pay their utility bills. And it's called Community Development Block Grant Program. So I'll cover that when we get to support services if that, or support reports, if that's okay.
Okay, so back to the governor's thing, this business here. Prior to the Wednesday meeting, were you guys going to give me some talking points or just use the Waputa letter or what you said you were going to give me something, so I just want to know when I've got it.
Yeah, we'll give you something. Matter of fact, what we've done is we've checked with a number of other utilities, and for the most part, I would say 99%, they're pretty much just do pretty much what we've done. There is one utility that is putting out $300 for low-income customers, and we're checking with them to see how they're doing that. Because any type of thing like that, if it's allowed, would the burden be put on the other customers? So we're looking into that, and we can get back to you, probably not by Wednesday, but we can get back to you on any other thoughts too. But we can give you something by the end of Tuesday, and then tomorrow just it's probably pretty much all what we've already given you, but we'll look at it further.
Jim, I think – you know, I've been doing this for a long time. This issue with the UTC, that's pretty important. So So I'd be interested to hear what the discussion is in Waputo about that. It'd be very difficult to roll back, even if, you know, it's just kind of gradualism. So, you know, I think we all need to be adamantly opposed to that.
Okay, good. I appreciate that input, Will. I'll make that note. But, Doug, anything you want to say? And by the way, I don't know that any one of us can call into that meeting, but I realize I'm the voting guy, but Dave could, you know.
Okay, that's a good point, Jim.
Okay. All right, our next item is commissioner reports. Dave, you have to.
Okay. Yeah, through May, the Waputo Water Committee continued weekly meetings. In June, we've gone back to the more monthly format, but it seems like one item of discussion that has been of great interest to a number of PUDs is ongoing discussion of water rights in Washington State. And I'd say we have our own unique situation in Clallam County, probably isn't as applicable as the current statewide discussion where you can transfer water rights downstream. And basically in the eastern Washington, especially where you have very long watersheds, that somebody can sell their water rights up in Ferry County near the Canadian border to somebody down in the Tri-Cities area near the Oregon border because they're worth a lot more down there because the agricultural crops are much more valuable. And there's just going to be a lot of future discussion on, you know, if there needs to be any limitations on that to make sure that certain parts of the state don't end up losing all their water rights. So anyhow, that's been a major issue with these Waputo Water Committee discussions. One thing I think Tom Martin did a good job one of the recent meetings is bringing up the issue of when WashDOT requires, I should say the courts require WashDOT to replace it with a bridge or any other type of highway projects, is that a lot of utilities haven't had much experience with this as Clallam has. So Tom did provide a very informative discussion of, you know, when you're on a private easement, if your utility runs over a private easement, WashDOT has to pay for the changes, whereas in most cases we're on a WashDOT right away and then the utility has to pay. So it's not something that was new information to me because I've talked to John Purvis and Tom about this in the past, but I think it just reminds us that, you know, we're spending more and more money every year on some of these projects where we have to relocate our utilities because of these projects, and that's just something the ratepayers have to pay for. Other things discussed, just COVID compliance with the safety requirements and the combination of distance and PPE is becoming more important as each utility brings more people back to work. And seems like everybody's been doing a good job of comparing notes and doing the best they can on that. The other thing is the unemployment fraud, the unemployment insurance fraud that kind of hit Washington. I know Clallam PUD's had a pretty big problem with that. Waputo, I think their entire payroll, eight employees have all had a fraudulent claim filed against them. And up in Skagit County, they mentioned that one of their employees actually had fraudulent claims from two different sources. So it sounds like there may be competing organizations out there are competing fraudsters, I guess, trying to take advantage of the unemployment insurance. So that's the main highlights from the Waputo Water Committee meetings. Last week had a Waputo Telecom Committee meeting, and Russ Elliott from the State Broadband Office was the primary speaker there. And says there's about $300 to $400 million in federal aid available to public utilities to improve broadband access, especially in the rural areas. Did further elaborate and mention that to be eligible to get the funds, you have to be an eligible telecom company, which is another acronym, ETC, that has actually been approved by the UTC, and that's an expensive and lengthy process. A single utility, certainly not utility the size of most PUDs would be able to afford. So I think the intent there is to form a consortium that would apply for that aid, and then different PUDs could join into that. So we'll hear more about that as we move forward at the next meeting, I'm sure. WAPEG's the other meeting I recently attended. I think the main takeaway from that is that BPA is in the process of suspending the financial reserve surcharge, which is about 1.5%. So we're going to watch that to see how that develops here. So that's all I have for today.
Okay, Jim.
Yeah, okay. I was just trying to go through my, well, I tried to rely on the slides for the WAPEG meeting, but there was a QBR on the 18th, what's interesting is the COVID-19, they did scenarios on that, and they don't, they basically indicated the scenario they run shows about a 3% decline in loads across the authority area. It's not a big decrease, mainly because we have so many residential customers, which they're actually increasing in demand. The other thing, of course, is the surcharge looks like a another surcharge that would be applied in 2021 is going to go into a, is going to be required this November from BPA. And again, it's just a loss of cash, which, of course, is what I keep talking about. There's also the discussion of, because of COVID, whether they should, with the current surcharge that went into effect earlier this year, I believe, December or earlier this year, should they rescind that and, basically provide that cash. That was talked about both at the QBR and the WAPEG meeting here last week, I guess it was, and a week before last. And I guess the issue, of course, is holding off on the surcharge is a two-edged sword, because all you're doing is kicking the can down the road, and you'll end up hitting the customers with a bigger rate increase 1 or 2 years down the road. But I believe, BPA is going to go ahead and go into a process to do that. But there's also a question about, the process itself, whether that's, the right kind of, is that a shortcutting of process and so forth. The other thing that's come up and you guys, I think most of you guys are getting these WAPEG slides. I may be telling you something you already know, but, they talked about load growth and so forth, and is interesting because more recent data in the last year or so is indicating flat or lower growth in over the next 10 years, and this includes closure of coal plants. So and then what COVID does is still a an open question whether that'll really have the same kind of any kind of significant impact or not. Frankly, if our economy has the kind of long-term recession that we dealt with in 2000, it certainly will. And I guess this is the other reason that I really want to have a rich discussion about what we do here in Clallam County, because we can't afford to lose any customers. Let's see, what else do I got in my notes? I did have a meeting with the Clallam County Executive Development Board. We, of course, talked mostly about, several little things, but the COVID response within the county and certain grants and so forth, and that's why I'd like to, bore into that more with Doug. And for BPA, they're having their their IPR workshops next week, this coming week, and for 3 days. And as I get the agenda, I'll look at that and try to spend as much time as I can, well, based on what's in the agenda, and kind of bore into that and so forth. You know, I think watching this QBR process, the quarterly business review and so forth, is that in the IPR process, is that they're changing their formats. And they do this about every 2 or 3 years. And the problem that makes for us is it's hard to establish a kind of a long-term baseline of things that you compare against, because they change all the numbers every couple of years, or the format of the numbers, and say, well, we want to focus our attention this way, not that way, and do a different cross-cut. And all of a sudden, it makes it harder for anybody, whether you're PTC or WAPAG or us, to understand, really what's going on with their financial situation. But anyway, I'll be paying attention to that as we go through these workshops with DPA. That's all I think I thought. Well, I was going to talk about, which I already did, was the fact that we have, and Doug, has said that it's up to the commissioners to deal with a request to address the Snake River dams through some letter or some process. And I've suggested what we do there is that I'll put together a package of stuff or something and brief it in maybe a month. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Well, I called in to a number of those meetings, so I won't go over that. But we had a meeting for the Executive Board of Energy Northwest. The subject matter was related to resource adequacy. The Department of Energy has approval of a program for $4 billion, and this is going to be earmarked for next generation nuclear reactors. And this would be a big boost to Energy Northwest to participate in this, but the real punchline is there's no Energy Northwest doesn't have to put up any money. It's not matching funds and so on. The way the thing is structured, the participants in this program have to partner. If they have technology, they have to partner with a utility or an existing plant operator. And so we were courted by two different entities. One was TerraPower, which is Bill Gates' next generation nuclear ambition, and the other one was X Energy. The technologies are different. TerraPower, of course, is you load uranium in, and it's a standing wave reactor. It's not as mature as the competing technology, but X Energy has a what we used to call a gumball reactor, where the fuel is in spheres, and it's sodium cooled. Now, yeah, that sounds very exotic, but right across the street from Columbia, there's the Fast Flux reactor, which was shut down, I think, back during Jimmy Carter's period, and it uses similar technology, so it's a more mature technology. So the conclusion was reached in order to access some of this $4 billion was that we would send letters of intent to each one of these, both TerraPower and X Energy. And that's allowed. That's no problem. You don't have to commit to a single alliance or coalition. So that's going to go out. So that would be now. Keep in mind, this is years down the road. This is not something that's going to happen in the short term. But of course, the issue came up about NuScale and their small modular reactor design, which Energy Northwest has been providing technical expertise and so on, and has an agreement to operate the first one of those small modular, NuScale small modular reactors in Idaho. So the decision was made to send letters of intent to both of those organizations. And it's kind of interesting discussion. There was a lot of bias towards Bill Gates, but you know, you got to go with the, and we're not excluding the TerraPower design, but it's, you can't just, well, anyway, we're covering our bets. And so that's the decision that was made, and I think it was a good one. All right. Staff reports. First item is a report on district professional staff and lineman attrition in 2020. I think you're muted, Doug.
A second.
There you go.
Probably sounds better now. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Loud and clear.
Okay.
Lima Charlie.
Yeah. We just wanted to let you know, the commissioners know, that we've had a lot of attrition departures from of experienced personnel here at the PUD since the beginning of the year, which is very unusual. It hasn't happened in the 13-plus years that I've been here now. So it's a little concern that we just wanted to let you know. We've the losses include two journey linemen out of our 22, one engineering manager, which is one of five degreed engineers that we have, one engineering technician, which is one of five technicians, one accountant, which is one of three degreed accountants, and one senior administrative staff personnel, which is our general counsel. So that's a significant number, and most of them have left because of higher paying jobs. We also have, in addition to these losses, there's some typical retirements coming up in 2020, which we believe will be at least one tree trimmer, and from the vegetation management group, and one another journey lineman. So the ones that we've lost so far, six of those eight positions still remain unfilled. And we do have coming up in the future here more, probably another four linemen retirements coming up. And so this has impacted us. The way it's impacted us is during the, because of the, in conjunction with the COVID-19 emergency, it's limited our ability to get a number of important capital projects for 2020. So some of them will be postponed, like the Fork substation rebuild and consolidation with SCADA. That's going to be postponed. The airport substation rebuild and SCADA implementation, that's going to be also postponed into hopefully next year. Airport substation, I mentioned that, elements of the central feeder, 115 kV upgrade. So these are some of the things that will be postponed. We're looking at more of the reasons behind the vacancies and some of these people going. One of the reasons, of course, is California now is paying real big bucks for linemen, with all the problems they've had down there with their PG&E and those utilities with the fires and all. So it is impacting us. It's impacted Jefferson. It's impacted the city of Port Angeles. The city of Port Angeles actually took one of our linemen. So it's just something to give you a heads up on that we're working on. And we probably come back to you in the future to discuss it again. That's all, Will.
Okay. Thank you.
Doug, when we talked about this early in the year, I think it is, I asked the question about attrition. And that was after we had a you guys gave a really good briefing on how our – that consultant came in and said, here's how our wages or salaries compare with others. And, you know, we were sort of in line with you know, everybody but the big guys over, you know, in Seattle and stuff like that. But right. I can understand going off and working in construction in California, but with other utilities, are we, you know, I'm trying to figure out, is there anything different now, or is it pretty much we're equitable, and it's these sort of oddball situations where.
Yeah, things have changed a little bit, both on both sides of us. Jefferson and City of Port Angeles has increased their wages recently. They've renegotiated new contracts. And that was at the end of their contract, starting new contracts. So they've jumped us higher than we are. Also, utilities like Benton and I believe Franklin actually in the middle of their contract renegotiated increases for some of their people. So it has changed since we talked to you last. And, you know, with the engineering manager, he went over to a small utility in eastern Washington, well, actually a co-op in eastern Washington, and he's a general manager over there. We've talked to you in the past about co-ops making considerably more money than PUDs in regards to their management personnel. So that's, you know, that's another impact that has affected all this.
What about like fringe benefits, deferred income, things like that? How do we stack up there?
Yeah, there's a report we'll come to the commission and give you an update on all that. But we have things to look at that we need to reconsider some.
Okay, good. Well, we'll wait for your report.
Okay.
Is that all you had?
Yes, on that.
So, Doug, those numbers you just gave us, does that, when you say attrition, does that include people like Ted Frazier who retired, or is this just people that moved to other jobs?
Well, if I count the retirements, we lost one tree trimmer for retire. Or I'm sorry, not a re- we lost one lineman, which was Ted, that we lost to retirement. The tree trimmer was another issue that he's no longer with us. But as I mentioned earlier, that we see a number of retirements coming up in the next year and 2 years for sure. There's, I think, four more linemen that could be leaving. And, you know, you never know when people are leaving. They're, I mean, it could, if you looked at people over the age or getting close to the age, it could be, you know, as many as eight leaving us. And other utilities are feeling the same thing, which is why some of them are changing their benefits and so.
Yeah, when people retire, you got to backfill those jobs. So it's not only a matter of retention, but you have to attract people. So,
yeah.
And unfortunately, pay is a big factor in doing that. Okay, our next item is an IT report on Wi-Fi hotspots. Steve, I think that's you. You look a lot younger on video.
And I'll stay on video. How's that? I won't do anything in person anymore. Basically, as Dave knows, he's been on several of these calls with different organizations. Hotspots and broadband is a really big deal now with COVID and schools being closed down. So Sean Dale Plain, our broadband supervisor, has been working with a lot of entities, the schools, this little memo we put together that I'll just kind of briefly summarize kind of tells you where we're at with the major school districts. With Forks, they basically asked for 35 poles so they could create their own mesh network out in Forks. And they were going to go do some studies on their own. So we're waiting to hear back from them on what they would like us to do to help participate. Port Angeles Schools, even though they, you know, are served by the city, we also work with OLIPEN, who's the ISP that supports them. Talked about mounting some access points at Fairview School for the free Wi-Fi for the students. They're okay. What they're doing is they're using their buses as hotspots. So they're moving their buses around into different neighborhoods for the students to use as a Wi-Fi hotspots. So that seems to be working for them. They're still, and not just the PA school district, but all the school districts, they're still grappling with, you know, when they're going to go back. And it's all over the map. Some are saying they're going to go back in September. Some are saying they're going to stay out for the rest of the year. So it's, and that's statewide. It's just all over the place what different school districts are doing. The Cape Flattery School District, which is the McCall, there again, they're working with Olipan out in Neah Bay. We do provide the backhaul for their internet to both Olipan and through KnowingNet to provide access out there. So we're doing everything we can for them. Squim Still School District has identified where their students are that are lacking internet. And so they're going to contact us when they've worked out a map on what they're going to do. And again, they're still debating on when kids are going to go back. So it's really a, it's kind of a moving target. And as Dave knows, there's pretty hot and heavy opinions on both sides of this. We've been working with the broadband office with Russ Elliott, and there's all this money, as Dave was talking about, that all these $300 million-plus that supposedly is going to be available through the state. But a lot of this is based upon grant money, with the FCC dictating what the guidelines on what these grants are going to be, and with most of the board of the FCC being private sector entities like CenturyLink and Verizon's and AT&T's, they're the ones controlling a lot of the rulemaking on these grants. So as you can probably well imagine, most of the requirements are pretty onerous for public utilities to try to get any of this money. Being on the KnowingNet board, we've talked about it at KnowingNet about how we're going to possibly go together as different utilities go together with possibly KnowingNet being the administrator for us all to try to get some of this grant money. Because a lot of the districts just don't have the staff time or the availability to try to meet all these grant requirements. So we're going at it from multiple angles. Basically, if you have any specific questions, I would defer to Sean, who's also on the meeting here, if you have any specific questions. But as a general rule, we are working with every district and everyone we can possibly think of to provide the backbone for the ISPs wherever they would like to try to bring up hotspots for not just students, but just the general public in general. So it's quite a complicated issue, even though it sounds simple, but actually Dave shaking his head. He knows he's been sitting on some of these long conversations, these 3-4 hour long WebExes, and you know, everybody's opinion about people that live out in the boonies that used to live in Seattle now wonder why they can't have high speed internet out in the middle of the boonies. But you can if you're willing to spend $15 million for us to run fiber out to your one house. So there again, that becomes a whole issue of who's going to pay for it. And being a public utility, that's all the way here. So we have to be kind of leery and cognizant of saying, yes, we're going to do some of these things when it would be a burden on all of our ratepayers, not just the few. So.
Yeah, I might add that I had a meeting with about 2 weeks ago with a number of the Clallam County school superintendents, and it also included Kitts PUD and Jefferson PUD. And the discussions around revolved around what Steve was kind of saying, students that don't have access to a strong internet and how they could be identified. And then once they're identified, the ways which we could get them or PUDs could help get them a connection. And, of course, the issue was brought up, even if we did get them connection, how many of them could actually afford the internet once you get it to them? So that's something that has to be looked at, too. And the superintendents were interesting. They pretty much didn't know what was going on with their school systems. Sean had been working with all the school systems for the most part. Forks was the only one that had worked close with Sean and said how great a job he did and how he's working with them and fulfilling their, helping them to fulfill the needs that they do have. The others, didn't know Sean was in the picture that much, but he, Sean was down there working with him and taking care of him and work with him. So I appreciate all the work that he did, and we'll see what happens. Like Steve says, a lot depends on who's coming back to school physically and who's doing it virtually and how they're handling it in the future. And we'll see how that all falls out.
What about Peninsula College? I hear that the higher education is going to online classes much more extensively than public education. Is that a factor, Steve, or not?
I don't know. Sean, do you know the answer to that? What the school's doing, what the college is doing?
It doesn't look like he's on. That's fine. We'll forego that.
Yeah, he's...
Sorry, Will. Are you asking about a question of connectivity, or are you just asking what they're doing?
Well, is there any program that – does this program include higher education or not?
They have not approached us for anything. I have made them aware that if they need more bandwidth, we're happy to increase it in Forks. I don't provide it for within the city of Port Angeles, so I do not provide it there. We do not have anybody currently on campus in Forks, so they haven't had a requirement as of now, and I have not heard of anything.
He's asking about the Peninsula College, if you've heard anything from them.
Yes. No, I have not.
Okay.
That was what I was talking about.
And I don't think
Peninsula College has a campus in Forks.
And I think Will, as far as his grant money that's being touted through the broadband office, I don't think that – I haven't heard anything about higher education. Dave, you've been sitting on all these meetings. I don't think they said anything about higher education. It's mostly been K-12.
Yeah, I think they did talk something about Wazoo expanding their network or something, but that was about as far as they talked about anything higher education.
That's what I thought, yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. Our next item is BPA financial reserve surcharge update. Sean, are you on?
Yeah, I'm here, Will.
Right, you're the host.
You better be on.
I'm nervous.
Commissioner Anderson and Waddell already mentioned BPA is in the process of suspending the financial reserve surcharge for the remainder of fiscal year 20 and then all of fiscal year 21. By implementing what's called the 7I process, which is part of the Northwest Power Act. Just for some backup information here, the current surcharge this year is $30 million, and Qualum's share is just under $450,000 for this year. And so the surcharge is triggered anytime BPA finishes the fiscal year and doesn't maintain at least 60 days cash on hand. So they didn't maintain 60 days, so they implemented the surcharge, and it's charged to us over 10 months beginning in December at about $44,600 a month. And so what BPA is proposing is to spend that for the remainder of this year, and if all goes smooth through the 7I process, meaning nobody objects, it could be implemented as early as August. But if somebody objects, then we probably won't see any relief for fiscal year 20. But assuming nobody objects, it could be as early as August. And as Jim stated, it is a double-edged sword. The downside is that, you know, when we get to the next rate case, instead of a $30 million surcharge, it's most likely going to be a $40 million surcharge, which is going to have an increase to the district's wholesale power costs. However, the immediate savings can help mitigate reduced power sales due to COVID, and it would also potentially assist us with delinquencies and write-offs, which are also due to COVID. That's just really brief update, Will, and unless anybody has any questions, that's all I had on that.
Okay, thank you. All right, action items.
Will, I said I'd add at the end of the meeting an update on the community development block grant program, and I've been on some conferences with that. with most of the Clallam city managers, EDC, and Clallam county representative, where the district may be able to get some funding from the utility release program is for our low to moderate income customers. This is in the CDBG Economic Opportunity Grant, COVID-19 response funding. And it happens to be under a code. If you look through their document, normally there's nothing that's there for utility payments. But they have a subsection 5Q, which I can read, which the substance payment, which one time, what it says, a subsistence payment, one time or short term or no more than 3 months, emergency payments on behalf of individuals or families, generally for the purpose of preventing homelessness. Examples include utility payments to prevent cutoff of services and rent / mortgage payments to prevent eviction. So that's where we could possibly fall under that, and we're hoping we do. The city of Port Angeles is seeming to take the lead on this for the cities, for all the cities that were involved, and including us, and will keep us in the loop, let us know if there's anything they need from us. I've talked with the city manager in Port Angeles a few times. Presently, at least from that conversation, I got the impression that there's some funds that might be released in the immediate future, and I believe it was about $350,000. It would be distributed between the city of Sequim, city of Port Angeles, Forks, and Clallam County. So some of them could dedicate some of this money for the district's low to moderate income customers, the PUD, so that we could get some funding through that. We're going to work closely with Nathan, the manager down in City of Port Angeles, to see how that works. Electric utilities very seldom get grant money, so we're not expertise on that. Tom and Water, he's kind of the expert on grants. He gets a lot for the water. There's a lot more water grants out there. But there is hope that there's another larger grant coming in the near future, and we'll be working with the same group, and we'll keep you updated on what comes out of that. So right now we don't know if there's any money coming. I think like the city of Sequim got $25,000. The city of Port Angeles, I think, was like 100. I might be wrong, 125. The county got like 150. And they're going to have to decide how they want to divide it up, whether it's for paying PUD bills or, city of Port Angeles certainly isn't doing that. But the city of Forks actually had implied that they would use it towards, I think, their water customers. So we may not get a whole lot out of that, but at least we'd be on the same page, if not for this one, for the next one coming up.
Good.
So that's kind of a quick summary on all that.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Doug, that was a good coverage on the grant side. The other thing was, like I mentioned earlier, is like forget all that for a minute. Is there something else that we ought to be doing? And let me give you a specific idea that was positioned to me by the Macaw tribe, the leadership there. It's, and I think Port Angeles is doing something like this, is what's wrong with taking a certain amount of money and basically providing rebates to customers, low and middle income businesses, hopefully primarily, it could be residents, either one. And I think you've seen their two-page their application for that. It's very simple, but it's also based on the fact that we already know a lot about our customers. And so why wouldn't we want to do something like that? I mean, if it would come out of reserves or whatever, but that's already the ratepayers' money, so it's a cost that's already covered in a sense. but I guess I'd like some sort of, what's wrong with that idea or what's good about it or, some of the pros and cons given the situation, because there's nothing out there that I'm hearing or seeing through the surveys and the discussions with the business leaders and so forth and the groups that represent them that we're going to, you know, this is having an impact. We're going to lose businesses. Residents will be affected too. Now, whether that means they just use less power or they leave or whatever, I don't know. But this, like you were, or Sean was getting at, is that if we can do something to slow down delinquencies or no payments or whatever, that's helpful, and just keeping a business around. I guess I'd ask you guys once again to put some thought into a sort of non-traditional approaches, because they're not grants and they're not a loan or not deferring a payment, but you know, other things, other ideas.
Okay, yeah, we can look at that, Jim. I know, like I mentioned earlier, one utility was doing something with $300, but that was one out of, you know, 20 or so that we had had looked at. Of course, the COVIDs and eventually with people not being able to pay, you know, now there's no late charges, and there's, which is going to cost us, I think, $200,000 to $300,000 a year, collections we don't get from late payments. So there is, with the COVID too, and people not paying and maybe dropping off and, you know, not paying their bills, you know, that's going to impact our reserve, like you were mentioning, reserves. But we can look at that, and we can bring it to the commission and throw that out there and give you some alternatives. And, you know, if you decide to take X amount out of reserves for something like that, you know, we can throw it out there.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. We'll try to do that by next meeting.
That would be very appropriate and timely.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, action items, I think T has probably captured those. Do we want her to read them back to us?
I think the only one is, Doug, I think the only one is what Jim just asked us was, I don't know if there was any other specific action items.
Just keep in mind that reserves are there for a specific purpose, and so if we draw down reserves, we've got to replace it. So ratepayers will be paying for that. So,
right.
Okay, comments from the public. By the way, I got a note here from Scott Sims. He was going to try to stay on for public comments. I'm not sure he did. Sean, is he on or not?
No, he's not.
Okay.
He dropped off.
Good. Other public comments?
Okay, I'm going to open it up to the call-in users here first.
Okay, good.
If the call-in users want to make a comment, if so, please state your name.
Nina Sarmiento.
I saw Brian had his hand up there, Sean.
Okay, I'll get Brian.
And James, too. Two hands.
I'm not getting those hands. How does that work?
They're just waving in the picture.
Oh, okay.
Christine, through comments, she asked to make a comment, but...
You're kind of muffled, Sean. I don't know what that is. Richard also had his hand up too, Sean.
Okay.
Hey, Morris.
You got that, Sean?
Yeah.
And Peter Vanderhoof.
Okay.
And you're going to call on these people one at a time, is it?
Yeah, so the first one I had that requested was Christine, and she requested through chat.
I'm good. I already sent it in. Thanks. But I do have one comment. This is Christine Reed, and I'm from Carlsberg. And I do have one question regarding the EPA is expected not to meet its energy efficiency target by 25%. And I was curious how that might affect the, you know, affect the PUD. And I don't expect an answer right now, of course, but I wanted to put it out there for maybe in the future for us to get a response. I'll send this in as an email also.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next was Nina.
Okay.
Thank you. So I see Jim Waddell as the only commissioner actually looking into BPA's assets. He's trying to figure out why BPA has already spent or already lost $30 million this year and is imposing another surcharge. Doug and commissioners, if you are not doing this work, can you at least listen to what Jim Waddell has to say? Or are you blindly accepting what's on the fact sheet? Fish survival over the dams is very high. That's a direct quote from a PPC fact sheet I was handed to by PPC when they came to our meeting. If you can't question that, that's a characteristic of a follower. We need our elected officials to be leaders. Leaders question. Leaders are not embarrassed to disagree. Doug, you said today this is a position you don't want to be in. If you don't want to be in this position, then get out and get out now. Because PA City Council just signed a letter supporting dam removal. Anyone can do a FOIA request to get cost versus revenue on the dam. I just listened to a webinar where Sean O'Leary from Northwest Energy Coalition talked about the errors in the DEIS and how replacing the LSRD power is feasible. When it comes down to it, commissioners, is these are people's lives you affect. People here struggle to feed their families and then have no choice but to fork over 10% of their monthly salary to you for power. You have to do a better job in providing us the cheap power we deserve and we know that exists. Thank you.
Okay, next is Brian.
What happened to Brian?
Not sure. Video went away too. Go back to him. So next would be James.
You're muted, James. There you go. Yeah.
3, 4, 5. Good. Two things. We'll start on a positive note, and that is that I really, again, appreciate your COVID response. You're quite a good job with that. That's much appreciated. And also, I have to also acknowledge your professionalism in terms of conducting the meeting after having this contentious discussion about the Public Power Council and the consequences of being black limits. I just want to talk about an overview, which it has to do with time lags. I'm all for transparency. Fact-based reality. And China, a physician came forward and said, we have this virus. And he was stopped by the local authorities, which probably lost us about 2 weeks in time. An exponential factor. And then the United States response was such that, it's a flu. It's not going to get any place. And right now we have 2 million people infected, and 112,000 people dead, actually more than 112,000 people dead, and that's because of the slow response. It's like facts are there, reality will bite you in the ass if you... And in terms of you guys responding, locally, that's great. In terms of, and actually Washington State's doing a great job in terms of COVID response. I'm liking this too. Also, so what I see in terms of the PPC is that they didn't like the message that Jim Waddell was giving out, so you kill the messenger, rather than really taking a hard look at the facts, the data, And, it's sort of like your doctor saying, well, you've got cancer. You say, oh, no, I don't have cancer. Our tendency is for denial. And we have to get over denial rather quickly if we're going to survive. I look at that in terms of human-based climate change. It's a slower time lag. Here in the Olympics, the glaciers are melting, that's yes. over time. It's a slower time lag. You know, who knows what the water flows will be, you know, in the, on the Columbia. If BPA, if the historical, you know, water flows will be there, if they're not guaranteed. So,
James, could I ask you to kind of conclude because you're running up against time.
All right. So what I encourage you all to do, and I know you to a certain extent, is to look at alternative energies, look at batteries, and actually check out the data that Jim Waddell is putting out, you know, rather than just saying, oh, this isn't true because somebody else has told me something else. To really have a hard look at the data. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Jim.
Dial does not work.
I'm sorry, James.
Okay, next is Richard.
You read me? So my comments are directed. I'm hoping that Will is tuned in as well. So
I'm saying, what did you want Will to do?
I want Will to listen carefully.
All right, I'll listen.
Yeah. That's your assignment, Will.
Another one. Wait a minute. I thought we covered that, Richard. No more assignments.
As a retired teacher, I can't get over it, okay? So what we have here in Jim Waddell is a maniac with a mission. And I worked for a superintendent who was an expert at the beginning of the year, each school year, at picking out the incoming teachers that were maniacs with missions. His expertise was turning that energy into something positive for the community. So you've been sitting on this situation for months, maybe hoping that Jim would just settle down and go away and become part of the background noise. I assure you that will not happen. Your job now is to turn this motivated, focused energy the constructive dialogue that works for RPUD and for all the ratepayers. You may have to hire a staffer who is an expert in communication as well as an expert in data in order to channel all this energy in a positive way. I just watched the greatest challenge of your career, Doug. I know that you are up to it, and I just hope you have to stick with it. Thank you for the chance to testify.
Thank you.
Okay, Patty?
First, I'd like to say how great of a job everyone has done through the COVID-19. I've heard so many compliments from citizens about the job that you guys have done, being closed and everything else and doing the job you've been doing. So that's number one. I heard a lot, and I don't really want to bring this back up, but the PPC letter and the services they were providing, are you doing anything to look at what you're going to do as a result of the loss of those services and who else is going to provide those services? That's number one question. Number two, I am not really well-versed on the Snake River dams. I've looked at a few of the documents, but not in detail. And my first question would be, how is the PUD impacted directly by the Snake River dams? And what is our direct loss or benefit depending on whether they stay or whether they go? Are there documents that the PUD specifically has written that is directly impacting our customers alone? Because I understand they're over in Oregon, but is there a paper that says this is the direct loss or benefit as a result of our customers having the loss of the dams or them remaining? That would be my question. Maybe the documents are out there. Maybe, Jim, you can help me with that. But I haven't seen anything that directly relates to our customers and if there is or isn't an impact. The other thing is I'm going to provide a little bit of information about nonprofits. I've sat on a lot of them. I can tell you I was president of the Economic Development Council here at one point. We had clients that were coming into town that wanted to do business in our community, and the executive director told the board they would not share the information with the board on who was coming. It was proprietary information. I have had experiences with nonprofits, and they will tell you, we'll give you information or we won't, and no one is required to provide it as a nonprofit. It's a whole different ballgame than a public entity. So just those are my comments, and if maybe someone could get back to me with some answers on the questions, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Patty.
Mm-hmm.
Who's next?
Hello, I'm Peter Vanderhoof. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. A brief bit of background. I have a degree in environmental policy and assessment, worked for a few years for the Quileutes as a fisheries biologist. I have a background in that and did some of their research work for them, like when the Forest and Fish Agreement and all that sort of thing. Anyway, I have read some of the documentation and looked at the numbers in terms of the Snake River dams, and that's what I'm calling about, is the information that's provided by the latest draft EIS came out looked like a public relations document. It didn't look like a serious scientific report. Is I've seen and read numbers in the neighborhood of $45 to $60 million a year cost, averaging out, for maintaining the Snake River dams, which are run-of-the-river dams. They're not storage. They're not flood control. They're not any of those things. Background, I actually floated down through the Snake several times before any of those dams were there. I'm that old, and went to Washington State University. In any case, I strongly recommend that you people look at and read and think about the data that Jim has apparently provided you with, that they, although per customer the cost is not high, is there is a cost to all the customers in the supply grid area for maintaining those dams, which are not really doing anything except killing fish. Is the warming of the waters is lethal to the fish, so they're not going to be saved any other way. And the other costs, like transportation, which is a special interest, but transportation from Lewiston down through to the Columbia is easily met by, you know, rail freight at a far lesser cost than the dams are costing. And we don't need to be supporting special interests at a cost to us that's not returned. And in terms of irrigation, that's easily also accommodated at a less cost than the current cost of the dams. So why does it not make sense to breach those dams and save the money in addition to, and I'm not going to get into that, but in saving, hopefully, the salmonids and the orcas and the other systems that are dependent upon them.
Peter, you've got about 15 seconds.
Okay, so I'm strongly in support and in favor of the PUD doing the same thing the Sahara Club has done and Port Angeles has done, is sending a letter supporting the breaching of the Snake River dams. Thank you.
John?
John?
Will, it looks like
Ryan dropped off.
So there's no others.
No others? Okay. All right. We will not have an executive session, as indicates on the agenda. Is any other business to come before the board?
No, Will. That's all from staff.
You didn't get any written comments, Doug?
No, we didn't get any.
Okay.
Will, did you say there's going to be an executive session or not?
No, there's not. And I suggested to Doug that we put on the executive session may be called. That way we don't, mislead folks.
Vincent, sent in the written comment.
I did
send in a written comment.
Sean, you want to read that, or Christine, you want to read it, or?
Let me see if I can find it again. I wrote it a long time ago this morning sometime.
Yeah, too late.
In the chat.
No, uh-oh. There is a, where is it? There it is, comments. In regard to when Commissioner Waddell had mentioned my name regarding the documents that were sent from the PPC, because part of one of those documents, page 2.6, has something that is mine, and so my name is on it. But and I'm stating this because I was mentioned, and I'd like to state that since July 11th, 2019, I have not associated with DamSense, nor have I been associated with Mr. Waddell in a personal capacity. On page 2 of 6 in the confidential pages is a Facebook posting with a portion of a cease and desist poster that I created for the March 1st, 2020 March of the Dams kickoff rally at the BPA Core Complex in Portland. After the rally, I came home to Carlsbad. I was not aware nor involved with the March 5th event in question. I was involved with organizing the March 1st event and have recently been assured by the co-extension lead, Gloria, that Waddell did not in any way facilitate the March 5th event. I am an advocate for the restoration of the Pacific Northwest ecosystem and will unashamedly continue my commitment to preservation and restoration of Mother Earth. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for clarifying that, Christine.
You bet. I just couldn't believe my name was associated with this.
Okay, Sean, do we have anybody else?
Nobody else.
Okay, thanks, Dave.
You bet.
Okay, well, if there's no other business to come before the commission, we're adjourned.
Thanks.
We'll call this a success.
Yeah.